In this episode of The Full Nerd, we talk about the 14900KS and the MSI Claw. The Claw. Welcome, everybody, to episode 294, just six left before 300, of the Full Nerd podcast, PC World's premier PC hardware podcast. I am your fill-in host, Adam Patrick Murray, and I'm filling in still for this guy, Gordon Maung. He's back, everybody.
Hey, everybody.
Gordon's back, and there's going to be
you
some trouble.
Live on the internet. It's been a while.
Yeah, welcome back, Gordon. Glad to have you. We're going to catch up with you in a second, but I am also going to introduce Brad Charkas. Hello, Brad.
How's it going, Adam? Gordon shows back up, and you rub it in his face by doing the one-take intro right off the bat.
Wow. Like it's, you know, yeah, the bar is real low for me, so, you know, it's just I just mess it up. I don't even retake it because I'm like, well, whatever. I can't do any better.
It's a podcast, man.
Yeah, yeah. Speaking of not doing any better, Will's here. Just kidding.
I'm well, thank
joking.
You,
I'm joking.
Hey.
Oh,
I'm going to go back to my vodka and it's Will, water, for the record.
Willis slides on the verticals and horizontals. Hello,
hey,
Willis.
Second Will here. Hello, everyone.
You keep calling yourself. I've never heard anyone call you Will.
I know. I've actually been called Wallace, William,
Wallace,
Wilbert. I don't know.
Wilbert.
Who calls you Will? How do you?
I like
rando,
Wallace.
Who knows?
I'm gonna call you Wallace.
Wilbert? No.
Wilbert. So, Wilbert's no. Never okay. It's never okay to call somebody even if their name is Wilbert. That's not okay.
Well, yeah. Hello. We've got pretty much the full nerd crew back. Elena unfortunately couldn't join us, but you know that is the first thing we want to talk about is Gordon's back. Gordon, you know, how are you doing? Glad to have you back. Glad to see you. Everybody in the chat is very glad to see you. Thank you. Thank you for coming.
Yeah, no, and I, believe me, I have missed everybody dearly, and it is fantastic to be back on a live show for the first time in basically 6 or 7 months. So it's been awesome. I have a lot of things to say, but I don't want to turn this into a cry fest. Obviously, people know I have been battling cancer since last July, August. It's been a really, really hard road. But to keep this upbeat, and, you know, I want to just say thank you to everybody. I don't want to make this into an Academy Award speech where they play music and pull me off the stage, but
don't do that, Willis. Don't
oh,
do
man.
That.
Yeah, there's a lot of people I want to thank. Everybody from my company, IDG Foundry, that has been standing by me through this whole ordeal. I've got Kleenex here in case it turns into a cry fest. But as I've said before, there's no crying in PC building. As well as, you know, obviously coworkers, family, and all those. I love you all for being with me, and also the nerds out there, and also all of the people who reached out to me. You never realize where you're standing in the world is as a person until you run into something as serious as, you know, facing mortality. But I've heard from so many people who have come out of, you know, taking time out of their day to talk to me, to cheer me up. Just, they wanted to talk. And I really appreciate it because it makes you realize that you're just not an a-hole. Because, I mean, the world, you never know. The
you're
world,
not an a-hole.
You're not an a-hole. Yeah, no. I've known
that.
You for a long time.
But you never know because, and also, you know, I'm sort of wired not to be like, you don't like to brag about yourself. Like, oh, I'm a good person. And you sort of say that, oh, I'm a good person. That's like, well, you're probably not, right? Because that just seems
if
like.
If you need to say it, then yeah.
Yeah. So but the weird thing is because the opposite was like, oh, I must be a terrible person. But then I realized that, no, the people that have, and there are so many people to thank, and I probably should do that in another video. But, I mean, there are people who, when I would go in for chemo, and I don't want to name anybody because, you know, I don't want to get any weirdness, but the person knows who it is. Person would, you know, text me every time, put it in his calendar, and afterwards he would check in on me and really got me through those early days. Just so many people that reached out and just told me that I'm a good person, and it really helped. So, and I don't want to make this a downer, because, you know, I really, my condition is I'm still battling cancer, but I have been off of radiation treatment now for about a month or so, and things are better. I'm able to eat food that would make me hurl 6 months ago, and it's all better. And I think I, to keep this as a nerd story, I one of the other person I wanted to thank is my doctor, and Dr. Lee at Kaiser, who I knew things were getting better, because one of the last calls we did, it was like, hey, I got a question. I'm having problems with this dock for my laptop. I can't get this 4K panel to work. It's like, oh, I must be
your doctor
now.
Asked you that.
Oh, that's fantastic.
He asked you
that's the best news ever.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're still
providing tech support. Video call, but it's like, oh, well, yeah, no, I can. I was like, because I remember the laptop, he had an HP laptop. It's like, well, it's probably got Thunderbolt. Probably. Then I think it's like, well, it's probably your IT department's cheap, and they probably bought a lousy, you know, it could be the dock, could be the cables. You know, there's a lot of reasons why.
Oh, that's so good.
Because you're trying to run multiple panels. But I thought it was like, it's like, I knew that. I was like, oh, I guess I must be better, because he's asking me. Because in 6 months, he never asked a tech question.
That's so funny.
He did actually ask that. Like, and so
he's like, you know, we don't got much to talk about right now. Can you help me troubleshoot some problems? You know, no, that's awesome. Well, and I do want to ask. So, you know, I kind of put it in the headline, the, hey, Gordon's back, you know, but I mean, it's not like, oh, hey, Gordon's back to, you know, exactly how you've been. Obviously, it's, you know, that, but the idea is that I'm excited to have you back on the podcast regularly. So that's one of the things we're planning for, right?
Yeah, no, and I think I can do it. Again, I'm nowhere near 100%, but I have dearly missed this, and I miss the audience, because, you know, there's nothing that is better than just nerding out about stuff, and then just kind of watching the world go by was no fun. So hopefully I get the strength back, and get back into this game, because I think it's a wonderful place to be.
Yeah, I'm excited. Once again, welcome back. Yeah,
we're
glad to have you here. All the chat's very excited.
The chat has spoken. Gordon, you are the GOAT.
There you go. Yeah.
You are the GOAT.
Gordon is the GOAT.
Gordon is the GOAT.
And a good person.
And an awesome person.
Yeah, I can agree with that.
I mean, people asked every week, every single week.
Yeah. So,
for what it's worth, you'll still always be an asshole to me, Gordon.
Oh. You know what? Brad with the real takes here.
Yeah.
No,
that's funny. Yeah, so, you know, we're gonna have you on the show remote for a little while. You know, we'll keep things going. So bear with us while we work out the details on that. But once again, glad to have you back in any form. Excited to hear your opinions. They've been sorely missed. A lot of times I've been doing the show and I'm just like, man, I know if Gordon were here, he'd have a good opinion. But yeah, so
yeah, the takes were fairly tepid.
Yeah, I hope you have, like, you know, like a drawer full that you've been like saving up. You're like, you know what, I need to bring this take back when I come back.
Yeah, I know there's definitely, yeah.
there were definitely
I have, like, on some things. So
yeah,
there were definitely moments in the last couple months when I was like, oh man, Gordon would be yelling at his radio right now if he's listening to us.
Definitely.
So yeah.
So there's that. But then also we have something new I want to bring up as well. We actually have a job posting to come work on our team. Come work with me. Come work with Gordon. You know, come work with the Full Nerd crew here. Luckily, our company, you know, I've been fighting hard to be like, hey, we need some more people building this awesome YouTube channel and maybe even venturing off into TikTok and things like that. So, you know, we do have a, you know what, I don't think I put the link in the description yet, but I will for the pre-recorded version. But yeah, if you want to come work with our team, please feel free to, you know, put in your resume, whatever, in the job posting. If you know somebody and you're like, hey, you know what, this person, you should get this person, they do awesome YouTube videos, then let us know. We're open for all that kind of stuff. So we get to build up the team. So not only do we get Gordon back, we also get to add another team member. And we still get to work with Will, and yeah, we're growing, you know.
Build PCs with
yeah,
us.
Yeah, come build PCs. Do you like PCs? Then you're the journey's halfway there.
Wait, personal computers?
Yeah, personal
That's what
computers.
This is about?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, listen, man. If you're a Mac user, you know, maybe this isn't the right, you know. If you do Mac and PC, okay.
Okay.
Cool. But if you're just a Mac user, maybe don't apply for this job. I don't know. Or it might be kind
of
hard.
You know, I think that the problem is a stereotype of Mac users. There's a stereotype of PC users, and there's definitely some Mac people who are not the stereotype, and those are the ones that I think would be fine. But the stereotypical ones, no, probably not.
Probably really good at video production, which is a bonus. Yeah. But you know,
no latte
the other side is the PC side. Anyway, I don't have a segue on this, but you know, every once in a while at the pre-show, I like to bring up some random thing that I've been messing around with or testing. Mm-hmm. On my, we've talked recently about my keyboard journey, my custom keyboard journey, and I'm inching ever closer to building my first one. Will's going to help me with that as well, but a lot of people told me, hey, the next step in that journey is to get a key tester. So recently I got in a one of those key testers. So if you don't know, this has completely different switches on every single one.
Is that 81 switches?
No, it's I'm not good at math. This is 8 by 9.
72 then.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you.
Holy smokes.
For that. So 72 different kinds of keys. We got cherry, which are up here. Cherry, red, and blue. I knew that.
Yeah, those are the famous ones.
Those are the famous ones.
They were patented
ones,
for a long time.
Lately, I've been using the Khalil. What'd you say?
Kale.
Kale Box White is in the 8-bit do keyboard that I've been using. So I know that one. They got Gateron, Aliza. No. Aliaz.
I think it's Gateron, isn't it?
It's Gateron.
Zelios.
I don't know. The Zelios, I know. I don't know the Aliaz.
Telios. I don't know. Names that I've never heard of or know how to pronounce. But it's been fun. Number one, it's actually kind of a fun fidget item. Number two, feeling these keys, completely different keys side by side from each other, has been kind of enlightening to be like, wow, there definitely is a difference. Some of it I'm like, I can't really feel the difference, but some of them I'm like, oh wow, okay, that is definitely a big difference.
Well, so the thing I'll tell you is the tester is a good idea to get a sense, but you're really not going to know until you actually start typing, because the feeling of like whether you have to bottom out the, like if you get a keyboard and it has a good tactile feel, you can type without bottoming out the keys like some sort of ham-fisted mm-hmm. tyro. And that's really nice, it turns out, if you like that. There's different levels of noise, the whole thing. So are you going to go clicky, or are you going to go... Yes, Gordon.
Yes.
I didn't realize, Will, that you were into the custom keyboards. And
I mean, look at him. He's got nice glasses and a beard.
That's very judgy.
Yeah, you're right. You just need... I don't want to insult people, but is...
I thought I was the hipster of the crew, you know, and then this guy walks in.
I'm too old to be a hipster at this point.
But it just sometimes it feels like it's like a weird fetish, you know? I've said this before.
He's not wrong.
It's like the people like that, like, oh, well, this wine, it tastes like I can definitely taste the barrel cask or whatever. Definitely from, this is Picard 2052. Can you really tell? Because this isn't the Picard. This came out of the box of wine. Like, is it just... It just sometimes feels like it's people in that South Park episode where they're smelling their own farts. It's like, is it really that different?
So I think the jump is from, it's like going from a hard drive to an SSD, right? It's like having mechanical switch.
No.
I'm saying the jump is when you go to having a mechanical keyboard, you feel the movement again, and you remember what the Model 50 keyboard felt like 40 years ago. Like if having the keys that press and make a tactile feel is real good, I think. As somebody who types a lot.
It is.
Well, I'm not saying mechanical, but I'm saying
the different switches, really caring about, hey, what kind of dampening do you have in the shell, that kind of stuff.
So I'm the kind of keyboard person who buys a keyboard and I buy whatever the quietest switches I can get at that time are, because mm-hmm. there's always it's the never ending arms race to make things quieter or whatever. And then I don't touch it. Right. Like I don't have 50 sets of keycaps. I don't have walls of keyboards in glass boxes on the shelf behind me or anything.
Not yet.
No, I don't have space or money for that. So there's definitely fetishization. There's people that collect them like people collect Star Wars shit and Lego and everything else. I know it's shocking.
I just have to challenge SSD to hard drive, because that is, I think that's a heavy overstatement. Like, if you had to take my mechanical key and it's just off the shelf, you could take that, because if you had to force me to give up my SSD or my mechanical keyboard, take my keyboard.
Well, of course. Yeah, no question.
I think that's not really.
Look, we're going to assign you a few thousand words, and I'm going to give you this nice Mac keyboard with the butterfly keys, and you can let me know how you feel.
Well, yeah.
And we'll get back to you in a couple of days.
Okay. Yeah, that's not bad. I think the other part of it, too, that I think Gordon can appreciate is that we like building PCs, right? You get to pick all the different components in it, and it very much is a personal computer. The same thing can apply here. You know, like you really can pick out the different components of it and make it your own. It's not exactly the same, but it's got that same kind of thing to it. You know, like that's how I see it, is like it's an extension of, oh, wow, I built this beautiful PC. Oh, cool. I can build this other accessory as well. You know, it's an extension. Yeah.
And
of it. Cool.
Like you can change the software. Like you, like at this point, a modern mechanical, you can change the software. So like if you don't, like I don't ever use the caps lock or the insert key. Right. So those keys do different things on my keyboards. Right. I just don't. I don't want those keys because I don't need caps lock. I don't need a mechanical key. If I want to have a numpad work differently than it does in the normal on a normal keyboard, you can change the software, make them do whatever you want, which like you can't do on your Bubble Dome.
Fun stuff. Once again, I'm still earlier in my journey. This is that next step. Somebody asked me, who's at Bob Jones, friend of the show, Bob Jones, asked if I'm going to go full custom keycaps. I actually already have two keycap sets. I'm already down that path. So, you know, I'm taking it slow. I got some recommendations from the fine folks over at Discord recently about, you know, some easy things to kind of get into for a full custom build. We're thinking about doing like a live stream, something like that.
I pitched doing a full like season of The Bachelor where we get in a whole bunch of different keyboards and each week you give a keycap to the one that moves forward, the ones that move forward, and the ones that don't get keycaps stay behind.
Just
saying, it's like a 28 episode deal. It's gonna, you're gonna spend some time with them, do a little typing, maybe a little chatting, maybe get in the hot tub.
I don't know if I want to get that many in, but the last thing I'll say is that I was joking around with my wife Lindsay. I was like, I can't remember how many you said.
72.
It would be kind of funny if I built a keyboard just using all these individual ones
idea.
So that every single key is something different. That would be kind of fun.
Oh, that's a bad time.
My brain and fingers hurt just thinking about
that.
Like, my pinky is really strong, but my right index finger is just like really quiet. We got us a couple of super chats before we actually get into the meat of the show. Friend of the show, Skeet Sayer, gave us $2 Canadian. Thank you so much. Is asking, who is the Chewbacca of the full nerd? I mean, we have Chewbacca with
isn't
you,
it?
But, you know, who's the Chewbacca of the podcast? I don't know.
Hmm.
I mean, you're the tallest, aren't you?
True. But isn't Chewbacca also known for being quiet? Or no, loud when he needs to get loud?
So here,
loser. Rips your arm out of your socket.
Also, didn't get a medal. Yeah. I have a temper. I can, you know.
My question about Chewbacca is, do you think Chewbacca is like, when he's talking, do you think he's like adding to the conversation, giving information? Or do you think he's like, hey, man, do you think a quesadilla is a sandwich? Like, what's his
hot dog sandwich?
Right?
Yeah. Okay. I could see that vibe. Yeah. Anyway, we'll have to think about that one. We also got a $10 super chat from friend of the show, Nori SS. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Said, by the way, I can't be the only one that thought of Gordon as the cartoon meme on the old sick man in the bed, wishing he could still be arguing on the net. Yeah, he's definitely. Exactly. And then he said, see you at Zachary's in Berkeley. Beer's on me.
Hey,
oh, awesome.
Zachary's.
Yeah. We'll have to come show.
I love Zachary's. Yeah. Although I am actually looking forward. I need to try Zachary's pizza again because garlic is one of the things that has not come back for me yet. But maybe it's better now. So, and I love garlic. I'll like eat it by the.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Of course. The chat saying that it sounds like Elena might be the Chewy of the podcast. She's not here to defend herself.
So she could be Chewbacca right now.
Oh my God! It could be because it's simply like everything is like, raw value. APU. I thought graphics ever best deal.
He's back at it.
It's better because it's cheaper.
I thought she might rip your arm off when you were giving her grief about eating cereal the other day.
Actually, true. Yeah. No, she can definitely rip somebody's arm off.
Right? Yeah. See, Chewy agrees.
Yeah. All right.
It's quite casual. Just quite casual.
And somebody earlier in the show said, "Wow, the 14900KS comes out, and Gordon is finally back on the show. Intel show confirmed. 14900KS has launched.
He's got the blue background too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
What?
Just somehow coincides with Gordon coming back on the show.
You know, I should. Where's my Miranda card? Oh, I don't have it with me. Dang it. I have a whole Miranda card. We'll have to break it out.
It's a good one. Yeah. You have shown me. Actually, I have one right here. Intel got me this late, so I actually haven't had any testing.
I'll just take that.
I've been busy. Yeah, there you go. 14900KS, kind of like the 1300KS. Guess what? I bet it's a little bit faster and a little bit more expensive. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's a lot more expensive.
Yeah.
Uses a lot of power. Not a ton of reviews out there. But it's a known quantity. I think at this point it is the you can get 6.2 gigahertz out of the box. Just there you go.
That's pretty good. That's a lot of gigahertz.
That's pretty fast. That's pretty damn fast. Also, there's been some world records beaten by extreme overclockers as well. What'd they get up to? Nine and change?
Something, and it's crazy. All on liquid nitrogen. But do we want to pull up any of these slides? Because I actually did pull out some of the stuff.
Sure, yeah.
I have a doer if you want to nitrogen that up.
Do you have a specific one?
Which number, Gordon?
Well, I think we can start with zero, and this actually explains... Slide zero, and this is from the official Intel newsroom. Let me download. And I will say the launch was is a giveaway itself. The only video that I saw was from DeBauer, I think early on. Paul Alcorn from Pulse Hardware has recently posted his review of the 14900KS. We got our part late. You'll notice there aren't a lot of reviews, and that probably is a giveaway, right? That's a telegraph. Because I can absolutely guarantee you that if 14900KS came out and throat punched AMD in the throat, they would have sent this to everyone, right? Mm-hmm. Because that's what happens. But they understand this chip is very specialized. It is a very difficult chip to understand. And from seeing a lot of the reaction to it, I want to help people understand why Intel even came out with this. And this is the official press release. And this is extremely important because for a public company like Intel, you just can't make crap up, right? So the critical thing that is in the press release here is Intel today announced full specifications availability of the 14900KS processors, blah, blah, blah. Again, reaching the cutting edge of CPU frequency to retain the title as a world's fastest desktop processor. And then there's actually a note to say how in the world they're saying that. And basically, I will actually go.
Which they probably had to clear with the actual lawyers.
The lawyers approve the whole thing, right?
Because the lawyers have to approve it. And where's that?
Note number one.
Number one, at 6.2 gigahertz max turbo frequency, the Intel Core i9 processor 14900KS is the fastest desktop processor as of March 2024. So basically, they're making this claim.
Are they equating most megahertz with fastest? Is that what you think is happening here?
Fastest single core speeds.
Yeah, I mean, they're not. It's because they're, if you actually look through all of their presentations that are out there, you can go to, if we want to go to slide two or three, the specs are, there's a spec chart, and you could look at this in slide one, right? We could look at one.
Yeah, just slide one.
And for people on the internet, it basically is just a list of the 14th gen parts. KS is, essentially 200 megahertz higher. So in the same core count as the standard Core i9 14900K part. It's just 200 megahertz higher boost.
Yeah. So I should go out and buy one of these right now is what you're saying, basically.
Well, it depends on what kind of person you are. There are definitely reasons to justify it. But if we go to slide... 2 that basically is part of the Intel claims. This is part of how Intel is claiming it's the world's fastest desktop processor. There are some losses, there are some wins, but you know, it's enough to, I guess, get the lawyers to okay it, because they have to be able to sign off on this. And there's definitely
I think it's worth noting, looking at that slide, I assume it's on the screen still.
Yep.
Footnote at the bottom there. Notice that these games have the advanced performance optimization or whatever.
APO.
Yeah.
Well, and also the benchmark chart's not showing numbers. It's all normalized against 1.0, which is what...
Everyone does that, though. I don't like it. I don't like it, but everyone's doing that right now.
Well, I think it probably helps. Well, I think it helps. But, you know, for audio listeners, they're comparing it against the Ryzen 9 7950X, the 7800X3D, as well as the Ryzen 9 7950X3D part. So,
so it's interesting that they compare, they normalize against the 7900, right?
The 7900X3D. No, 7950X3D is what they normalize.
If they normalize against the 7900, if they normalize against... Wait, why is it?
Well, because for gaming, okay. For gaming, I think AMD still says the 7950X3D is the top end. Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's definitely some times where the 7950X3D does well, but I mean, honestly, we'll talk about this later, but the reason why people like the A core part is because you don't have that, you know, hybrid design where you have one stack, one non-stack, and it creates havoc. And frankly, we'll get into the discussion later, but still, there's probably enough here. For people, I want them to understand that the reason why Intel launched this part, mostly, I think, is to be, you know, to have a chip that they can make this claim to say world's fastest desktop processor, because when you can say that, when you can put that on packaging, when you can put that on bullet points at a Best Buy, at a Costco, or put that on a website, that drives a lot of people to go, oh, they're saying the fastest, so it must be the fastest, right? So even if you're not going to buy the KS part, you go like, oh, well, now I'll buy the i5 or I'll buy the i7 because they must have the fastest, they must be better. So the marketing value of that is actually worth having this chip. So
I mean, friend of the show Ziv has a good point. I mean, there's a lot of good points in the chat here, but the Ziv says the problem with the claim is that consumers are more educated now. Yes, right. I think, well, it depends on the consumer. I mean, I think there is a lot of discussion to be had here, because we actually had some really good discussion over on Discord about this, like, hey, what is the value of Intel coming out and saying, hey, you know what, we have the fastest chip. Also, we were the first ones to 6.2 out of the box. Can AMD say that?
Well, the real value is that their earnings report comes out in a couple of days, and you know, like, the investors love numbers that are bigger than the other, bigger bar better for investors. Right. Very true.
Well, that is definitely true. Also, hey, the box itself, it's got a little special edition.
That just means they're not going to make very many of them, it turns out.
I know. Yeah. Well, but it's all marketing. And, I mean, part of it, I can't remember exactly which user, but maybe I don't want to out them on the podcast, but they were saying, hey, how much actual weight does that have, though? Do we have any concrete evidence to say that any of the marketing stuff actually works? You know, like, and which we don't. I actually did reach out to Intel to say, hey, do you have any marketing that you can point to, or any studies, anything like that, that you can point to say, hey, because we say the things like world's fastest, you know, that it actually trickles down to parts further down the stack as well, or if it actually gets people to buy this. They said they're going to look into it, but he said anecdotally, the partners have said, hey, that is something that they're seeing drive sales. Once again, not hard evidence. We don't have like hard numbers to be like, oh, you say world's fastest and guess what, you know, sales go up by 10%.
Well, you see this in every market. There's some people that just go out and buy whatever the best one is, right? It's like you buy the $300 electric toothbrush when the $30 one does the same toothbrushing.
And that's the other point I have, is that, hey, there's buyers out there who are just going to get the best thing, the most expensive thing. So you could either sell them a $600 part, or, hey, guess what? Now you can sell them a $700 part.
Why do you think the NVIDIA graphics cards top out with the 4090 at $1,500 or $1,600 now, instead of topping out with the 4080 at $1,000, it's because they can sell those what would have been a workstation card
yep.
2 years ago, 3 years ago for to a consumer who's high-end focused.
But on the other end, yes, this part is not for everybody. This is not, we're not saying, hey, this is the best, so you should go out and buy a KS. No, not at all. What we're saying, though, is like there's a reason for Intel to release this and make those claims. And whether it's just a marketing thing or a feel-good story or maybe for the investors, whatever, there is a reason why they're releasing this. And I think, like, even though, you know, most people are like, eh, poo-poo on it, is stupid. They have to hit 500 watts just to get there. And it's like, well, but that doesn't mean that they shouldn't make it.
Somebody's going to buy it.
Yes, yeah, because guess what? They're going to sell it. And, you know, theoretically, it's going to help them in other areas as well. So
I forget the name of the product, but I remember maybe 5-6 years ago, Intel, I believe it was, released a very specific SKU that just was clocked super high, didn't have many cores, stuff like that. And it's like, why are you doing this? It's an OEM systems only kind of a deal. And they were saying that specifically the quantitative traders, the day traders, like their stuff are set up to execute buy commands, sell commands, like in a fraction of a second. So like every megahertz matters for stuff like that. So I don't think this chip is for very many people based off the reviews I read, but there are definitely people out there who do need the best possible stuff and are willing to pay for
it. Yeah. So
that's hundreds of thousands of dollars hanging on the line for those folks.
Which I can get why, you know, a lot of people would, once again, turn their nose up at it or make fun of it, you know, and it's like, okay, you know, cool. Guess what? The chip's not for you, then move on or be happy with whatever chip you do have or, you know, like, so, but also it's there and there are people who are going to use it. So
VC Gesture just nailed my, my use case.
Yep.
Yeah. Which is I have a cold drafty office and it's great. Having a really hot CPU is fantastic in the wintertime or in the summertime here in the Bay. Yeah. I can make it nice and toasty in there anytime I need to.
But yeah, so I don't know. Gordon, though, you know, you are a bigger Barbetta fan.
Well,
for sure.
Because I understand that's, and no, they I'm sure they have internal research to show that it is worth the squeeze for them. They don't release that data. I doubt they're going to tell you this, but when you are the fastest, when you can make the claim you're fastest, and as much as people are kind of angry, like, oh, this is ridiculous, they're so focused on the gaming, there are still legitimate reasons you want Intel over AMD. A lot of Adobe applications still love Intel over AMD. Run better, right? So there's definitely things that still run faster, so you could make a legitimate argument for that. So people need to remember that it's not only about gaming, but it just, when you're first, when you win the race, and even though you win the race by, you know, 2 centimeters, you still win the race. And yeah, it's $100 more for this chip, and it's incredibly stupid to Chewbacca, you know, the people that are like, the people are like, oh, no value. Rawr. So that's not the audience. It is really just to be able to make that claim and then hopefully get that messaging out to, I will be honest, less informed buyers, less sophisticated, the ones that are not going to sit there and watch every single YouTube review on it and then consume the charts and then go and read it and study it for a week. You know, again, I think the classic example is if I play for the NBA and I have a Supermax contract, I'm just going to call up, you know, Falcon Northwest or Main Gear or whatever and say, give me this chip. And because it's the best thing ever, it's obviously must be better because it's the, you know, they don't care. You know, it's pennies to them in the actual money. So it is not for a part for the people that are going to sit here and like Chewbacca and make copper wires out of pennies. So it's just not that kind of chip. So, and they're actually, it's interesting. Well, there's a other interesting thing. APO we mentioned earlier.
Yeah.
I do want to mention this.
Interesting discussion for sure.
What is APO? I don't know about this at all.
So it's application optimization. And although I have not figured out, like,
how do you get
the APO from AO? Isn't that just AO? But I guess
AOP?
That's like, I'm not sure because it doesn't. This is, if you want to show slide five,
yeah, it's technically Intel application optimization.
Oh, so it's APO. It's
IAO.
Yeah, but they call it APO.
They call it APO.
They're, and I guess it's because AO just sounds like it doesn't work. Yeah. But,
which I will say that they did first announce this with 14th gen. So this is not new. Right. But they've added more titles, and they've also announced that it is going to go backwards to we actually have a who wrote that article on PC World, Brad?
Mike Kreider.
Okay, yeah. Yep. So saying that it will come back because initially on launch they were like, no, this is only for 14th gen, and people were like, yep. Wait, so but what about 14th gen makes it unique? Yeah, so.
Nothing, do you have to do anything to turn this on? Do you have to have any software installed, or is it just kind of work itself?
Yeah, you have to run. There's an app, the APO app from the Windows Store. You also have to have a motherboard that supports DT, dynamic tuning technology, DTT. So the motherboard has supported. There's a driver, and you have to download the app. It is so it doesn't actually. They haven't really gotten into the brass tacks of it, but it is not a clock speed enhancement. It is not simply cranking the clocks up. It really is. Go ahead.
There has been theories, you know, that oh hey, maybe it's turning off cores or you know doing core parking stuff, you know. So
yeah,
but yeah, the Intel has not come out and said the actual sauce of it. And it is also interesting though. I mean, it is right now. So they're. The new amount of titles is 12.
You want to read them off so audio listeners know?
A big up from two. You don't need to read them off. Yeah, I think that's the interesting part for the title support for me. One, Red Dead Redemption 2, that's great to have in there. But the title support are all ones that have built-in benchmarks that reviewers use.
What a weird coincidence.
Yeah.
Not all of them, but yeah, a lot of them.
Although it does sound like I was watching Steve, a friend of the show, Steve from Gamers Texas.
Steve Burke. Yeah.
Steve is, and again, not to get back to Gordon, but the other people I really should have thanked earlier is the fellow YouTuber community. I heard from a lot of other YouTubers, Steve especially, who reached out and was really just trying to keep me, you know, my spirits buoyed up, and you know, I really appreciate that. As Steve talked about it is mostly looks like it's hand tuning basically for the chip. So they're basically going in, and this is something that I think is very critical to bring up. So they're going for APO basically goes in. And it's saying, okay, this game you need to run on, you know, these performance cores don't run on the efficiency cores. Steve has done some testing showing that, like, sometimes the efficiency cores can be less efficient. And to me, what it really sort of says is Windows does not have its everything in order for hybrid designs. Because as we know, we have P cores, we have E cores on ever since Alder Lake. So 12th, 13th, 14th, basically the same chips. You have performance cores, you have efficiency cores, and the operating system is not very clever at like, oh, where should I put this? We do know Intel has Thread Director. I think Steve described it as APO as like Thread Director for games or Thread Director on steroids for games. And it essentially throws the game on to the performance cores. There is some theory that also by leaving the efficiency cores not used for those games, maybe they're getting a little extra cache that the games are able to access, because we know from X3D that cache really matters in games because of the randomness. The more cache is better. So maybe if you actually limit the threads and the cores, you're actually getting a little... That's just one of the theories, but the testing that has been out there is... Actually, it's actually exceeded some of the claims Intel said. People have seen, I think, up to, you know, 18% improvement, 20% improvement in some games. So it is really there. But to me, what it kind of says is, damn, you know, Microsoft sort of needs to get its game in order, because it doesn't only affect 14th gen as well as Alder Lake and 13th gen. It is kind of a, you could sort of blame, I think, Microsoft and Windows for the same reason why people are so like, 7950X 3D, there's some games where it's like, why is it so much slower than a 7800X 3D part? Well, because there's no mixed, you know, because it's a hybrid design for that X3D part. And some games are running on the wrong dies on AMD too. So it really, to me, says Microsoft needs to get its, you know, everything in order for these hybrid designs for x86, which they didn't really deal with. Intel tried to address it with Threadirector, which the powers of Threadirector are given a little overly subscribed. Like, people think it actually is telling Windows, you know, to do this, or actually is directing it to do it, but it isn't really. It's really hinting, as we did a video with Wendell from Level One Techs, and it really just sort of hints to the operating system, hey, you should run this, but the operating system is not really actually listening to Threadirector. And, you know, and as we know, people were not happy with how much of a kludge it was to get the 7950X3D mixed die to work. So I kind of wonder if this is something that's not really going to get better till, like, Windows 12.
It's annoying, because this was the thing we all upgraded to Windows 11 for, right? Like, we were told, like, hey, we have to do this. We have these mixed core processors, and like it's great that the Intel tool exists now, I guess, but it doesn't help. It seems like it doesn't help the people on 12th and 13th gen. And
it will eventually.
It is. They did announce the APO feature at least, but I think that
the 12th and 13th gen, just to be clear, and other games can be tried with this. You can go into like an advanced unsafe mode or something like that.
Really? Oh, I didn't.
And I like with the switch,
making my computer more unstable to make it slightly faster. That's always great.
And they're like, you can do it for 13th and 12th gen select chips. You can do it for any game, but we have no idea what you're going to get. So,
a real vote of confidence there.
Well, the bigger question I have is then, so why is Intel doing this? Because
APO or?
Yeah, APO, because that's a lot of work to go in and hand tune these games to say, hey, this is going to run better. Like, can they actually keep this up to an actual gaming release? Because a lot of people, you know, might be like, oh, this is a cool feature, but guess what? I don't play any of those games. Are they ever going to get to the games that I play? A lot of these are older based games. Can they do it for new games? Or could it be that they're doing this to show Microsoft, hey, listen, this is the kind of work you need to do in Windows. So, like, why do you think Intel is doing this?
Well, it's just because they, as Brad pointed out earlier, they need the performance bump, right? X3D, that big ass cache is it's awesome, and APO makes a dent in it. But if Microsoft is, you know, handcuffing their chip, they have to be able to do something to market their CPU to make the performance better. So cynically, that's why it is targeting things with built-in benchmarks, because that hopefully will affect benchmarkers. And I will tell you the one thing from covering the PC space for many decades now, the one company no one will ever cross or say anything bad about is Microsoft. Even Intel will not blame Microsoft for its issues. And as we've seen with the early launch of the Ryzen 1000 part, which had major problems on Windows, a lot of people thought it was scheduling. And AMD actually at the time came out and said, no, it's not Microsoft's fault, which I will use my example of. Basically, Microsoft shot the Ryzen processor in the face with a shotgun, and then AMD apologized for putting its face in front of the shotgun.
Oh, the Dick Cheney approach.
Well, it really is just... I will say no one will ever, ever, ever want to cross Microsoft. And Microsoft moves at its own pace because, to be fair, it is the most popular consumer operating system on the planet. They have to manage billions of licenses, and they have to do everything from crappy $300 laptops all the way up to $10,000 gaming rigs. It's a pretty big tent to keep everybody happy. So they just can't simply focus in and, like, let's make a handheld gaming operating system. It really is tough. So I think Intel had to do this cynically because they need the performance boost. So they just did it. And then hopefully at some point it will get rolled into Windows. I'm sure it will, because Microsoft also knows for ARM parts, they also use a hybrid design too. So they have to manage this. They have to get better at it. But it does take time when you have, you know, literally, you know, billions of licenses to deal with. So it's just much slower. We don't march at the same pace of Apple. They just simply can't take you behind the barn and put a bullet in your head if they don't like you. Wow. That generally isn't how it works on PC. That's what they do, Will. You know what they're going to do with all these x86 Macs and all these M1 Macs? It's like, hey, M1 by the way, can you come to the back of the barn? Oh, what's up?
Gordon, you can't build Apple Vision Pro apps on an Intel Mac. You have to have an M1 really? Mac, yeah.
At least an M1 Mac.
So,
but they regularly call the herd, and we're going to do this in 2025 potentially. We'll see if they stick to that, but it just generally doesn't. It's not how it works in the PC. It hasn't worked before.
I was going to say at the same time, Intel releasing this tool, it does help them in the short term, but it also has to apply some pressure to Microsoft to say, hey, look, this is what you're leaving on the table on our high end. You don't think they care?
Well, but also I think to the other point,
no,
and
Microsoft does not care.
Well, I think maybe a reason could be how many people realistically out of all the computers out there that are running Windows, I mean, we're talking about millions, billions?
Billions.
Right? How many of them are actually on a hard a hybrid design? Sure, AMD, Intel, and Qualcomm have designs, but we're talking about still within the last handful of years. How many computers out there?
Single digits, right? I mean,
it's Microsoft. You know, it's on them, but also I bet because, like you said, they're only a limited number of team, to work on stuff. And they're like, okay, well we could figure out this hybrid thing, but how many actual users are impacted by it? Let's do other stuff.
Yeah. And you're right. I'm being unfair to Microsoft because I say they don't care. I will tell you there are people at Microsoft that care a lot. They really care a lot. The problem is you just have too many fires to put out and it is such a vast universe. And frankly, they make so much money in other things other than consumer operating systems. We all know what it's like to work in a company where you're not getting, the proper resources. So I understand it. And you know what? Like, they know exactly how many people are on what platforms. And are you going to throw engineering resources at this to help this partner of Intel? Like, no.
You know what we need to do? We need to come up with a benchmark that shows that you can equate Office 365 subscriptions with a hybrid architecture. Like, so, hey, you know what? If your hybrid architecture, if you optimize for that, look how many more Office subscriptions you can get. Because then maybe they'll...
Boy, that's an interesting question, because we do know that clearly games that are very lightly threaded have problems with both AMD hybrid designs and Intel hybrid designs. But nobody's ever really looked at, how much does this actually affect Office performance? And I bet you the same thing happens where it's just throwing it to the wrong cores, too.
But, right? I mean, the thing with Office performance is when, Outlook on my 13900K and Outlook on my 10-year-old laptop open at exactly the same speed. Like, the gate is clearly not the performance of the machine. It's the fabric of the shape of the fabric of the universe or the quantum foam or I don't know what it is that makes Outlook slow, but Outlook is just always and will always be slow.
Yeah,
I have a lot of negative history with Outlook. Outlook is just that dog, so there's nothing. Like, honestly, I would want a 14900K S part delidded, cut some water cooled, just around Outlook, and maybe make Acrobat faster. Like, two things. Acrobat and Outlook are the slowest dogs in the world.
Look,
right?
I will tell you, I ran the 13900K S for about a week, a little bit ago, for a thing that I don't think is up yet. And everything else was really fast. Outlook, same speed. Acrobat Reader, give me 15 minutes.
A friend of the show, Dimmer, says Excel is CPU hungry. There we go. We need to get those Excel esports players in.
You need those big data sets. Yeah, we don't have big data sets. We're little data sets. Yeah.
Gordon had an awesome one from Excel Cup champion, but it broke, unfortunately, so we can't use it anymore.
Oh, no.
Yeah. It has problems, especially if because they're always releasing new versions of Office, so it's hard to lock down the versions.
Yeah. It's a live service. It's like a live service game. Yeah.
But I will tell you, for those people, for those actual people who drive Excel hard, 14900KS would be that would be nice on Liquid, clock up to 8 gigahertz. It would be it would be everything they would want, frankly. Yeah. And it's insane. It's like they are over the top with how hard they push a PC.
There was a demo when Microsoft rolled out the large data set version of Excel 10 years ago. They brought somebody in to talk to us who was the person who tracked, who had the spreadsheet that had all of the data about Safeway's consumer loyalty program. And the spreadsheet was like a bazillions of lines of data. Ooh. And like, they open it up and they're like, look, here's how this works. You open this up and then you just never close it until you need to reboot the computer, because it takes that long to open on the fastest computer at the time. So yeah.
Yeah,
and the benchmark we had, it was based off of an actual real model that this Excel expert had, and it would consume 128 gigs of RAM on the machine and use every single core running. So like, we actually hit the go button to get the answers, it would it would use every single thing on your computer.
The things that we use Excel for are light, and we could be using Lotus 1-2-3.
We're losers. We could basically be using Google Sheets, right? It's just, it doesn't matter. Well, actually, I do want to get a couple KS things. It's okay. Very interesting. Sorry.
Gordon's back, so he got all the slides.
I got the charts.
There's more slides. Holy cow.
Again, I have Gordon always has slides.
This is a big,
being frozen in carbonite for the last 6 months, I have unfortunately not been able to run any benchmarks. So I'm going to live through Roman. You know him probably better as Der Bauer. He's probably one of the reviewers that actually hit the actual launch date. Let's do slide 7, Willis.
Got it.
Oh, actually, let's do slide 6. Oh. Because you got to show Roman here, and he's got the chaos part, but then he's got this like Blofeld cat too. I didn't realize that.
Oh, Roman's got the awesome cat. Yeah,
that's a fluffy cat.
It really is like a Blofeld.
I love it.
That's a James Bond reference. Yeah. But slide 7. This is basically, again, this is the reason why. Oh, look at this! I want a 14900 chaos part because look, it's faster than the 7950X3D because it's only 176 frames. 175 frames a second for the 7950X3D versus 176 frames of the KS part. And oh, by the way, bigger bar is better, and that is also at the cost of 263 watts versus 83 watts for the X3D part. So that's
this is also at RAM speeds of 7600 versus 6000 on the Ryzen.
Yeah, he had some problems with memory, I think, getting it up. But
show me a 7600 memory system that's stable, and I'll show you how to break it.
All right, well,
and then slide 8, last slide. I swear to God, last slide. This is the reason why is I don't want to steal all of the thunder. I encourage you to go look at Der Bauer's video. He had two videos. First one was basically looking at performance of the KS part, and then he did a D-LID. And this next chart for audio listeners is Cinebench R23 showing a 14900 KS part stock, and also running multiple runs of R23, Cinebench R23, multi-threaded. And you can see in blue that it's, you know, for the most part, pretty stable. And that's with the K part. On the KS part, which, by the way, you can set the profiles to use even more power than the K part, using a 360-millimeter all-in-one CLC, you can see that yellow bar. You can see that trend line. It starts off at, like, by the way, pretty nice score, up above 41,000, and then the next run, it's down under 41,000, and then it comes down closer to, like, you know, 40,500. It basically keeps getting lower and lower, and by the fifth run, it is now basically down to under 40,000.
Is that because your loop, the water, the coolant's getting saturated? Is hot?
Yeah. Even with an all-in-one, fairly decent 360-millimeter, the KS part is just pumping so much power through it. It's, you know, you start to, the water builds up the heat, and then you start to drop the scores, and you can see that in Roman's testing. By the way, he has more tests over. Go look at his videos. But he also did it with custom liquid cooling, and you can see with custom liquid cooling, it's stable for the most part.
Yeah. Whereas it actually trends up a little bit.
Yeah, it actually gets a little faster. And then he actually did a D-LID, and I'm not going to steal it because it would be wrong for me to steal it. You should go look at his video. He does a full D-LID on the 1400 KS part, and he was able to get, I believe, all the P cores up at 6 gigahertz, I think, or is it 5.8? Wow. Very, very impressive performance. So when he delids it, he also saw a tremendous drop in temperatures and also, you know, much better stability. And I think his scores were exceeding 42,000 in Cinebench R23 with a delidded part. So that kind of tells you what this chip is for. And by the way, in the other news with the 14900KS chip, is Intel has given permission to system integrators. That's basically, you know, custom boutique builders like Falcon Northwest, Mangear, and sorry if there's other people, there's Corsair, there's other people that are building these machines. They're giving them permission to delid them offer the Intel warranty. Now, I will say delidding from SIs is not new. Voodoo PC did this like 15, 20 years ago. So it's not like it's really new, but Intel is saying, we give you our blessing, and typically if you are a PC vendor and you delid it and something breaks, they have to eat the cost of the CPU, which is not cheap, but Intel's saying they're going to warranty it for them. So
yeah, that's the new thing, right?
Yeah, that's the new thing, and you could really see, again, if you go out and buy one of these really, really nice tuned-up boxes with custom liquid cooling and a delidded chip, you're going to get actually very impressive performance out of the 14900KS part. So there is some reasons to say the chip can't justify its existence, but I will say this to keep Chewbacca and Elena happy. Yeah, it is not a CPU for most people. 90% of people should not buy it unless you're rich and you don't care. If I were rich, I wouldn't care, and I'd be totally happy. I wouldn't care what Chewbacca says. But for the most part, you shouldn't buy this chip. It is for extreme audiences. It is really, really just to get Intel in front of AMD a little bit to be able to make that claim. And yeah, I do understand why people are hot about it and they were like, oh, it's terrible, but you know, there's some reasons for it. Yeah, don't buy it. I don't think it's for everybody, you know.
Yeah, to me it's if you can articulate and say right now, this is why I want this chip, this is what I need it for, here's how I will use it. If you can say that to yourself right now and give yourself hard answers, you might be in the market for this chip. But if you can't, like,
and awesome, and enjoy it too, yeah. You know, like, whatever. Yeah. Don't let anybody, you know.
Yeah. Drafty cold office, I'm ready to go.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
The thing I found interesting, I was reading Tech Power Up and Tom's Hardware reviews of them. There's a bunch of things I find interesting. But the part that really stood out to me is the 8-core 7800X3D. Is toe-to-toe with this thing in gaming performance and uses a third of the power.
Right.
So,
and half the price.
You don't need productivity. Yeah. Yeah. It's so if you don't need productivity beyond 8 cores, like that is really impressive with the 7800X3D as well.
Wah, 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 gaming performance.
All right. That was the KS. We need to move on to the MSI, the Claw. So I've had this in for about a week now.
Yeah,
I have it right here in front of me. It is on still. Nope, the screen turned off. But yeah, the new gaming handheld from MSI. It is the first one to release with the Core Ultra platform inside. So I think it's been getting a lot of buzz, but also a lot of people being like, "Huh, okay, well, I'm not going to get it." Rightfully so. The performance is kind of interesting.
The interesting thing to me, sorry to cut up your intro there,
no,
is kind of what Gordon was saying about the reviews for the 1900, 1400KS, 900, all those parts. I don't really see any mainstream reviews out there of this yet. And the fact that it went on sale, you know, a week or two ago, interesting. So I'm really interested to hear what you have to say.
Yeah, you know, I did bring that. So I actually had a meeting with MSI on Friday. That was one of the questions I asked. It was like, you know, why from the outside that looks pretty bad, right? A lot of times we would say, oh wow, they're not seeding review units. That must mean that they are not not excited to get a bunch
confidence.
Of review out there.
Yeah.
What they told me was that hey, they wanted all of the orders to go to people. Like they didn't want to, you know, pull away and get review units. They wanted to focus on fulfilling the orders that had already been placed.
That's a classic excuse.
You know, good on them, I guess. But yeah, reviews. I mean, I would say it's right now what's out is mostly first impressions. We actually did a live stream last Tuesday. Because we didn't do the podcast, just kind of, you know, going over impressions of the hardware and the actual software experience. Now, once again, I finally got a week in on it, and I've seen other first impression videos by awesome people, like over on Retro Game Core, ETA Prime, all the cool suspects. Carrie from the Fox has it in and has been doing some testing as well. So definitely more to come. But yeah, TLDR. I mean, the performance just isn't there compared to if you're comparing it directly to the Ally or the Steam Deck in any appreciable way, right? The Steam Deck still is a monster when it comes to battery life and efficiency. The Ally with that Z1 Extreme chip, you know, still can blow the doors off of it when it needs to. So, you know, in most metrics, it is not the best performing options. And curious, on the other end of that, I saw some early testing on people testing the i5 versus the i7. So the two different, there are two different versions of the Claw, the i5 i135H and then the i7 155H. The GPU inside is the exact same CPU core count, but the i5 version just has four less CPU cores. So same GPU cores, just four less CPU cores on the i5. And surprisingly, but also not surprisingly to some, is that the i5 version actually outperforms the i7 version in a lot of testing. And that's because in such a thermally and power limited part, I think the max TDP is what, 35 watts, something like that. If it's firing up all those CPU cores, it's actively taking power away from the GPU. So when you have four less CPU cores to try to feed, hey, more power gets to go to the GPU. So I thought that was actually kind of interesting. Most of the time you wouldn't think that, oh, hey, you buy the most expensive thing, then it's going to perform better. In this case, it almost actually looks like the cheaper version is the more performant version out there. More testing to be done on that. I don't have an i5 version in to test it against, so I don't have any hard numbers, but that's an interesting thing.
I mean, sometimes slower is faster when you're thermally capped, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's definitely, once again, the Fox, Carrie, awesome guy. We've had him on the podcast. We need to have him on again. He does a lot of really good efficiency testing, performance analysis, like really deep dive kind of stuff when it comes to the actual chip and the platform. So I'm very excited to see his testing around this stuff. But yeah, Gordon, what do you think about this whole i5 versus i7 thing?
Yeah, it just says that, you know, there's a thermal budget problem on the Claw that they haven't gotten a handle on. I'm interested, can you go into the UEFI and disable cores? Is it give you that kind of, you know, desktop like, you know, control over it?
That is a good question. I don't know.
It feels like it'd be worth disabling some of the cores in there, but again, this sort of speaks to, I don't want to blame Microsoft again, but it feels like we need more granular control over chips for performance. And because, you know, because if you would think that the operating system would go like, oh, you have an i7, you know, honestly, you should run, you know, you don't really need all these cores to be lit up and making heat, which of course then steals from the thermal budget of the graphics core. Why don't we only run on fewer threads, right? But it's not doing that. It's just simply doing a bunch of other stuff. And then now you hit that limit for your thermal budget and performance goes down. I would think that the operating system would be smart enough to handle that, but it isn't, right? Well, so that's what it kind of says to me.
Yeah, I mean, and it is, like, there are power management profiles in the MSI Center. They even have an AI-based one, depending on whatever application you're running. And yeah, I mean, it's generally at the heart of it, basing it off of Windows power management, and which, yeah, I would say is more of a generalization on where, yeah, it's going to throw all that kind of stuff. It is not going to be like, hey, you know what? This game only really needs four cores, so let's just turn off all the other ones and give as much power to the GPU as we can. It doesn't necessarily work as cleanly as that. There are third-party applications. Carrie has shown off some of them that he actually runs on his handhelds that will do that power management. And of course, the Steam Deck is kind of different because it's Linux. There is some stuff going on there. Definitely different processor, all that kind of stuff. But generally, on these Windows-based devices, it is just a laptop with, you know, laptop-based hardware in there.
Right.
And it is trying to do so much in such a small form factor. So that's one end of the story. The other end of the power management, which is a weird thing, which I did talk to MSI about, is that It comes with an included charger. It is a 65-watt charger. I asked them.
Big charger.
Well, I asked them. I was like, this oddly looks like one that I've seen with a laptop. And they are going to confirm it for me, but this just looks like probably the same charging brick that comes with one of their Media Lake based laptops, which is, it's 65 watts. Let me double check. Yes, 65 watts, which is adequate for the Claw. But when I got home, I have multiple charging bricks there, and when I turned the device on, and when I was setting it up, I have a little cable that shows the little power management read or the little watt reading on it. So I was like, oh, cool. Okay. It's, you know, pulling the wattage. That's cool. You know, and I didn't think anything when we were setting it up. But when we were doing the live stream, I noticed, I was like, wow, huh. Whatever I had plugged in at the time, it wasn't charging it. It was just bypassing the battery.
Oh.
And so we actually tried a bunch of different chargers. I got one laptop charger to actually charge it in real time. It was a Lenovo 100-watt charger, which is weird. And then I went home again after the stream and plugged it into all my bricks again. And it's only providing power when the device is on. It's not charging it when it's off, and it's not actively charging the battery when it's plugged in.
Well,
and
weird.
On.
Well, no.
That's using the OEM charger?
No. The included charger works perfectly. It charges it when it's off. It charges it when it's on. It provides enough power. But everything else, except for this one Lenovo laptop charger, everything else is only providing power when it's on. It's not actively charging.
I was going to say, because sometimes that's a thermal management thing. On the original Steam Deck, if you were playing games and charging at the same time,
sometimes,
depending on how hot your CPU and GPU were running there, or your APU was running there.
True.
It would slow down the battery charging a little bit because it couldn't handle the thermal load.
Now that I've done a lot more just plugging in and actually looking at it, that's not the case.
Okay.
Yeah. Because, I mean, the first indication of, hey, if the device is off, plug it in, it's not charging it. There's no power being delivered into the battery. And once again, when you turn it on, it is providing power. I can see that the battery isn't draining. But the battery is also not going up.
That's not correct.
So,
and those chargers are actual high wattage chargers, USB PD,
I've used a range. Yeah. So I have PD bricks that are 65 watt or 100 watt. I've used different laptop chargers from 65 watt PD to all the way up to, like, I think 130 watt is what I have, like a Dell one that goes all the way up that high. But yeah, I asked this to MSI. They have heard multiple reports about this. I mean, because this is kind of a problem if you can't charge it on anything but the included charger.
Yeah.
I mean, hey, if you have the charger, then cool. But it's just also not how I use it. I have PD based bricks that are awesome, and everything else I can just plug into it. And this one is not able to do it. So they're looking into it. They asked me to provide the specs of all the chargers I've tried. They're not quite sure what's going on yet. But I told them, I was like, this is something that needs to be addressed. This is an interesting behavior. They're not quite sure what's going on. Is this an Intel thing? Is this a, you know, their actual handheld thing? But this is definitely something that scratches my head.
Yeah. To me, like, I've basically gone to night school for USB-C PD stuff. And I would say it's something that hopefully should be easily solved with the UEFI update once they sort of nail it down. It sounds to me like they're not negotiating the USB PD correctly from all of those third-party chargers, which is a behavior from...
Except for one. I don't know why this specific Lenovo 100-watt charger actually did work.
It's because there's three dozen USB PD profiles for different wattages. And if they don't speak, if they don't have a common denominator between what they support and what the charger supports, then it'll charge at the least common denominator, which is going to be like 10 watts or something like that, probably.
It should still charge, though, when it's off, doesn't have that PDO. But
it doesn't charge at all.
Even if it's off.
Yeah.
That's sloppy.
Yeah.
Like early on,
because I'll take a trickle charge. I'm like, okay, you know what? Yes, some of them, like, okay, you know what? You're not providing the full power, but it's right. At least trickle charging. This is literally providing no charge.
Yeah, that's weird.
Yeah, and again, that's behavior that was similar to when USB-C was first coming out. You know, HP only worked with HP USB-C chargers, even though it was, you know, PD. But their feeling was, you're going to blow up our laptop with your cheap ass, you know, $5, you know, AliExpress charger, so we're not gonna work unless it identifies itself as an actual HP charger,
which is a good thing, yeah. Right?
It is a good thing, and eventually we'll sort it out. We're like, okay, then they started to warn people, and then eventually they actually updated the BIOSes, so like, okay, we yeah. charge. So well, it is probably easily solvable.
Well, and some people are saying, oh man, this is proprietary. I don't believe it's proprietary.
No
indication is that it is proprietary. Once again, they're looking into it, but that's definitely something where I'm like, okay, pump the brakes. this needs to be solved.
We need to get you go ahead, Brad. Sorry.
I was just going to say, that makes me wonder, how is the rest of the software and app experience? Is that such a real part of these? That makes me wonder, there might be some rough edges.
The software, so MSI has the MSI Center M, which is, I did confirm, it's the mobile version of MSI Center, specifically for the Claw. It's a more lightweight thing. You know, it has the front end launcher that you can kind of go into. You don't have to. There's a toggle to turn it off at launch. It's fine. I've run into a couple bugs here and there. I think more that it is not as fully featured as I would want, especially the on-screen overlay for the actual performance metrics. There's some curious things in there, like when you go to the extreme power performance profile. The extreme power profile. You can manually set the fan curves, but when you go to the manual power profile, which you can manually tune the PL1, PL2, you can't manually set the fan curves. I was like, you might as well put the manual fan curves in there as well. Whatever. For the most part, everything is in there for a front-end launcher you would want to use, except for the overlay. The overlay is the real thing where I'm like, it's missing a lot of key metrics. It's not giving me a lot of the good stuff. The slide-out menu, I can't remember the name of it, you know, to bring up the options. Yeah, the tray stuff. It works fine. Like, it's not a buggy mess. I've been able to use it just fine. I think it's just not feature rich at this point, which hopefully they're working on and will add to it. From everything else, the Windows side gaming on it, it's fine. I mean, I've had a couple of graphical problems. There's been reports of, you know, certain games that don't like the ARC architecture, and there's some bugs here and there. But this is all work that Intel is putting on the ARC side. It's not really MSI's thing. So some of it is, you know, Intel putting in all that work into ARC to make sure it's running. At the end of the day, though, it is not as performant as AMD.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of people are like, oh, wow, poor Intel. They can't even keep up. True. You know, like, if you're looking for the maximum performance, if you're looking for maximum battery life, I wouldn't look at the Claw right now. But hopefully that changes. You know, hopefully Intel has definitely shown that they are working real hard on ARC, getting, you know, performance and driver optimizations for newer games, all that kind of stuff. But yeah, I mean, it's early days. Like it's better than where it was, but it's not.
As a product itself, like, to me, I think I'd rather opt for one of the other ones, like you were saying, the other handhelds. But I think it's still good to celebrate the fact that Intel is even in this position, even though they're clearly behind AMD.
Oh,
hell
yeah.
2 years ago, there was no chance you'd ever find an Intel chip inside of a handheld.
That were offering them, but like, I got the sense that they never sold those options because they were just, this is much better than Xe graphics that is built to a lot of these mobile platforms. This is much better. It's not up to where AMD is at, but also AMD has been killing it.
So is this stripped down ARC that's the GPU in this? Is that what this is, or is this souped up integrated? And I realize that those are things that exist on the same spectrum. So
this is not a discrete GPU. This is still a mobile package, but it is based off the same ARC architecture that is in the discrete.
So then my question is Meteor Lake. Is
Meteor Lake.
Is there potential driver uptick on this down the road? Because, I mean, we've seen ARC GPUs have seen massive performance increases in the 2 years since they've come out.
100%.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, they've done a lot of work specifically on like DX10 and DX11 performances, stuff like that. Yeah. So they've definitely done a lot of work, but I think at the end of the day, it just doesn't have the oomph. Like, I don't think at this point some of these games that are optimized are going to be like, oh, wow, all of a sudden we flipped a switch and, you know, it's just as fast as this AMD processor. Like, I don't get the sense that the core count in these ARC GPUs in Meteor Lake is able to keep up with that. Yeah. So I mean, and I always say, don't buy based off future promises, buy it right now.
Course,
so,
yeah.
You know, I do think the Claw will get better. I do think Meteor Lake will get better, but I don't think this is a, wow, this is a knock in the park. You know, and this is, hey, do you want the AMD or do you want the Intel? It's not the same equation.
Well, that's interesting, is that people in the chat are asking, like, should they hold off and wait for a second gen, possibly? Like, you know, if because there's all these first gens out now, and it's been a while also since the Steam Deck has come out. So it's like, well, should they wait, or should they buy, you know, or like you said, should they buy now?
Yeah, I mean, Asus has already mentioned that the second Ally is coming out this year. Steam Deck, I don't think, is going to have a hardware revision.
Valve said not to expect anything for a while when they release the OLED, basically.
Especially on the processing side. Yeah. They might do maybe a slight revision or something. Yeah, kind of thing. So, there's two questions there, right? There's always two questions. Should you get a Steam Deck or should you get something else? I think for the majority of people, they just want a handheld console experience. Get a Steam Deck.
Yeah.
But if you already know you want a Windows device, which there are plenty of reasons to get a Windows-based device, and there are a lot of people who already kind of know that, that is a legitimate use case. I've been trying to rack my brain to be like, okay, there are reasons to get the Ally. There are reasons to get the Legion Go, even though that's not my favorite. There are reasons to get some of these Aya Neo devices like the Flip. They're really cool features in a lot of these. I'm trying to think of a specific reason to get the MSI Claw, and unfortunately, I can't. I can't think of one. Like, hey, you know what?
Like a moral objection to buying things from AMD.
Yes.
You're allergic to red.
Okay, yes. If you're like, hey, you know what? I just can't buy AMD, then yes, this is your only option right now. I actually do have another handheld coming in. The One X Player X1 also has a Meteor Lake chip in it that I'm getting in. But yeah, at this point, I can't see a specific need for, or unless you're like just an MSI fan.
Yeah.
If you're like, hey, you know what? I love MSI stuff. Then go with God. Cool. But yeah, like a lot of these handhelds, the Windows based ones have some sort of differentiation. The ROG Ally has this awesome 120 hertz VRR screen. Awesome.
It's amazing for streaming games from your desktop PC.
Yeah. The Legion Go has the detachable controllers. If you know you want that, then awesome. So they each kind of have their own kind of little flavor, but I can't point to one specific one on this one. Cool. That's like, oh, I actually, you know what? Well, but it's all Intel. The other thing that I've actually been testing is eGPU performance over Thunderbolt 4, which is, oh, hey, you know what? That's another way that I actually was able to get it to charge with it off. I plugged it into my Thunderbolt 4-based eGPU dock, and it charged there.
But, I mean, the thing that struck me is you're talking about this. The TDP was, what, 35 watts, you said? And when I looked at benchmarks,
it'll boost higher, but yeah.
When I saw the benchmarks for it, it's the Steam Decks at 15 watts are crushing it in a lot of stuff. And that's shocking.
Well, it depends. Do you test wattage for wattage? Like, hey, 15 at the Ally or the whatever. Yeah, the efficiency out of the Steam Deck is awesome. You can go higher.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. So, yeah.
I don't. So,
and that equates to battery life. It equates to heat. I will say it is actually pretty cool and quiet. Like, a lot of people are like, you know, there were some early benchmarks out there to show like, oh, wow, this package is hitting 105C kind of thing. And it's like, why is this not? Okay. Oh,
but the back is all great on this is also worth mentioning.
Yeah, for sure. So a lot of people are like, oh, my God, it hits 105C. This thing is trash. It seems to be only in specific instances. Sorry, I have orange cat hair.
I was going to say, I hope that's cat hair.
Yeah, my orange cat. Get hair everywhere. So yeah, but for the most part, like the thermals, the noise profile, it's I would call it on par with the Ally, personally, for the games that I've been playing. Yeah. But
I have a question.
Yep.
So I do wonder. So you don't really feel like SteamOS versus Windows? Is there a clear winner yet? Or
it's funny you ask that.
It's funny we actually have a video going up. I would say
question to that after.
Yeah, I would say yes. There's a clear winner. SteamOS.
I think unless you're playing something that is for religious and corporate reasons locked off of SteamOS, like you want to play Fortnite or Rocket League, basically, I think SteamOS is pretty much the clear winner.
Or yeah, or you know, if you have specific launchers that you want to use and which SteamOS or it's at least the Steam Deck has gotten better about loading you know that kind of stuff on there.
Yeah,
but it's not Windows. I mean, it's literally Windows. You can do whatever the hell you want with it. What do you want to do with Windows? You know, like Carrie from the Fox, his main desktop has been a GPD Win3.
Yeah,
for years, like he just uses it as a main desktop. So, like, cool. If you want to buy this and have it be your own thing, you know, and it runs Windows, then there's plenty of power out there. That's not for everyone. I'm not saying everyone should do that, which is why I say, yeah. I mean, the Steam Deck is just awesome. SteamOS is awesome. Like, but there are reasons to have Windows for damn sure.
So here's my follow up though. Do you think that Valve will be committed to making Steam Decks into the long, long future, because it feels like the culture of Valve is they don't really necessarily want to be making hardware. They would really want to enable the ecosystem. So I would, don't you imagine that we'd see SteamOS loaded by third parties, and then they slowly give up on making hardware, because hardware is generally no fun to do because it's such a...
So having talked to a lot of the open source people at Valve and working with the VR people at Valve for a long time, I worked at a VR company for 5 years, 6 years. I think their strategy with VR was, hey, we're going to make this thing with HTC and then the Index because we want this hardware to exist in the world. And hopefully that'll snowball into a whole market emerging, which, as we all know now, didn't really work out. This go around with the Steam Deck, it seems like it's successful enough that it's become its own, like there's a section of Valve dedicated to Steam Deck at this point, both software and hardware. Now, what I think, I mean, it's also open source, right? All of the stuff that they're doing, the DXVK stuff, all of the Proton stuff that they're doing is open source. And if they don't, in the old Steam Machines days, when they launched those Steam Machines in what, 2014 or 2013, whatever that was, the with Alienware and Main Gear and all those folks that made a bunch of small form factor boxes that ran a kind of janky version of Linux and didn't play games very well, like those open source people have been continuing to work on this stuff since then, right? This, like, the Steam Deck emerged out of the work that started in 10 years ago on Steam Machines. So I think it's easy to look on the outside and say, yeah, Valve is a little short sight, like is a little short attention span on stuff sometimes.
Well,
but I do think if they don't make a more portable version of SteamOS that they can partner with OEMs to release, I think the community is going to do it for them, right? That, like, that's where it's going to end up.
Which there are some versions, Hollow ISO. There's a new one. That,
there's a spinoff of Hollow ISO already. Even
Bazite.
Yeah,
Brazit. I can't remember. I've seen some articles of people saying, like, hey, this is pretty awesome. I don't know. Yeah, that is a good question, and I've definitely been thinking about this. Well, the question I have is, because I'm sorry, the head of Valve,
Gabe Newell.
Yes, thank you. Has been a strong opponent to Windows, right?
Just
you
to know. Be clear, early Microsoft employee, founded Valve with Microsoft money that he made working at Microsoft in the
true,
early 90s.
True. Well, but I mean, he has been very vocal about Windows and the monopoly, right?
I think he doesn't like paying licensing fees to Microsoft, probably.
Right.
They got really nervous around Windows 8, and that's when they started developing the Steam Machines, and they've used that to build this. I've heard it's like a eventual escape hatch if they need it.
Yeah.
Well, so that's why I feel like the real long-term play is to make Linux a viable option, a viable alternative, right? That seems like the long game. Hardware, yeah, maybe that can come and go, but to have that in their back pocket to say, hey, you know what? we can say F you to Windows. I mean, I don't think they will, but they could, and Linux is like an awesome viable option, right? Well,
and
what do you think?
And like the thing that's happened weirdly is that the open source stuff is working, right? Like there's a thing that happens in open source where when enough people start working on something or a company gets behind it in a big enough way that they're putting actual engineering on a project, all of a sudden the adoption increases and then the number of people contributing increases and then it snowballs and all of a sudden you go from OBS being like the janky third-rate streaming software to being the clear market leader in every category. And like we're approaching that point with Proton and DXVK and all that. Like there are literal bugs in the Windows AMD drivers that DXVK fixed months and months ago that like have like when there's cache and pipeline problems on the Windows AMD drivers that just don't exist on the Steam Deck because they fixed them in DXVK and the AMD open source drivers like ages ago and they just haven't been backported over to Windows yet. So I could not be more bullish on SteamOS, and I hope whether it's Valve that releases it and decides to maintain a more publicly available version for not Steam machines or someone else, I'm excited about that eventuality.
Well, then to go back to Gordon's question though, what do we think about the longevity of Valve and making hardware?
Steam Deck specifically.
Yeah, as long as people keep buying Steam Decks, they're going to keep making them.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I still think though that like I sort of see Valve's culture is they have always embraced publicly, you know, Gabe has said this, they embrace the open architecture of the PC. So they just want openness. They don't want a closed off OS like Apple hardware, yeah. Right? So I could see them. The Steam Deck kickstarts handheld gaming PCs. By the way, you're going to buy all your games on Steam, but it's probably, you know what, we'll leave it to the hardware people. Because I mean, how much real money are you going to make in the long term? When the money is really to be made in the you know, having Steam be the game, the market. So I'm just kind of wondering if long term, all the hardware partners take over, sort of what the vision over the original Steam machines was, but now we're seeing that come to fruition in handheld.
I don't think that's necessarily going to happen.
Yeah,
we'll see what happens, but we can already see we're starting to see these Windows handhelds, and I feel like a lot of the design decisions they've made with those are very tech marketing, bigger bar, better Windows laptops kind of decisions. Whereas Valve and the Steam Deck, you can look at it and you can tell, hey, you know, this thing has a low res screen for a reason. It has this for a reason. Everything's tailor made.
Much more console-like.
Yeah, much more. And even if they do wind up releasing it to more partners, which they've said they're going to, not necessarily open source it and drop it on the internet, which I think is a long term goal, but they said they are going to start giving the SteamOS to other partners to use. You know, they're going to race to throw a 1440p screen on there, and that might not be the best thing for the idea of mobile handheld gaming itself. So I think Valve is likely to keep a hand in this market just to keep that guiding light, kind of consider it like a Surface, like a Microsoft Surface, but for Steam.
Well, here's the other advantage that Valve has. They have the platform advantage, because when they sell a game on Steam, they get 30% of the money, or 20% or 10%, depending on how big the company is, right? When MSI sells a handheld and then somebody buys a game on Steam, Valve gets 30% of the money on that Steam sale. So that means MSI is competing with somebody who could make very little margin on the console. And when they look at and Valve knows how many that people get a Steam Deck and they immediately go download buy five new games, then like they're able to say, oh, these customers that are buying these handhelds that we sell for no margin are the most highly engaged customers, and they buy the most games and they spend the most money on downloadable stuff and they buy in-game purchases, and we get 30% of all of those sales. So we're going to sell our thing at cost, and then everybody has to compete with Steam's lower power, bigger battery, longer battery life, smaller, cheaper screen device with bigger bar, better marketing. And like,
Which works.
I mean, but MSI and ASUS and everybody else that's in that game, that's a losing game when you're competing against somebody who can sell it for nothing.
Yeah, but long term though, that to me is a problem, because if all of the hardware partners cannot compete with the Steam Deck because Valve doesn't care about making money off of it, what are they going to do? Oh, you know what? We are going to hang out with our best friends, Microsoft, now. And then now you suddenly have, you have the technical expertise of Asus and MSI and Lenovo and Dell and Alienware. And I'm just saying those because I don't know if they have handhelds. But now they're basically, they're going to coalesce around Windows. And then at some point, Microsoft is going to get its, you know, handheld game world in order. And then now it's Steam Deck fighting all these hardware partners. That, to me, seems like not a good future for a Steam Deck or for Valve. Whereas if they sort of embrace all these partners and not compete with them with hardware, they can build their store up. I mean, just seems like...
Well, once again, that's which is the goal? If the goal is to sell hardware, then yes, they're doing an awesome job at it. But if the goal is to sell software, then they should be more than willing to be like, oh yeah, we should get SteamOS OS on everything. Yeah, sure, maybe buy our stuff, but you know what? These other ones are viable options too.
I don't think those are mutually exclusive. Like, I think they can. I think they can have this. Like, they can, you can hold both of those ideas in your brain at the same time without warping the fabric of the universe.
Well, I don't know, because unless Microsoft does do some major thing, like.
A lot of rumors there.
Yeah, a lot of rumors. But I mean, you're right, Gordon. I think that is one of the problems, is that these other companies that are trying to compete, like, that's not how long in the game is Asus and Lenovo and MSI going to be in? I don't know. I mean, they seem very committed for sure, and they're making awesome devices. But in 10 years, can they continue to make razor thin margins? I mean, we kind of saw that on the GPU side as well. You know, EVGA came out and they're like, hey, we got to get out of the game because we just can't keep up with this GPU stuff and razor thin margins. So, like, at that point, though, like, then is Valve going to come back and be like, well, crap, in 10 years, we ate everyone's lunch because we had a good product and now we can't move SteamOS onto anybody else?
Well, see, I don't think Valve cares, because, yeah, like Will said, Steam, regardless of whether you're having a Windows handheld, a Windows laptop, a desktop PC, a Steam Deck, you're buying your games through Steam, or the vast majority of people are buying it. True. So they're getting that cut no matter what.
Yeah,
true.
And yeah, whether, like, the difference is they're going to maintain the SteamOS team indefinitely, probably. If they don't maintain the hardware team, did they save any money? Not on Valve scale, right? Yeah, they have 500, 600 people at Valve. It's still not a huge company by the. Like, what was it that came out in the lawsuit? Revenue per headcount is the highest of anybody in the tech industry.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
So, $780 million per 100,000 per person or something.
Yeah, it was crazy. So they're probably fine.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. Like, I like the setup, and I think there's a lot of room for experimentation with SteamOS based handhelds from third parties, because Valve can go in there and say, hey, we're the low bar. Like, we're going to make sure you have good battery life. We're going to make sure that this works good. You get it cheap because we don't have to have the margin. But then that leaves room for folks like Lenovo and Asus and whatnot to offer, okay, hey, we're doing a 1440p OLED screen. We're, you know, putting in fancy joysticks, you know, upsells. And when you're working in experience upsells like that, those inherently lend themselves to being able to charge higher prices. So I think there's room there for that.
And the thing that's easy to forget is that now the barrier to entry for a gaming PC is lower than it ever has been before, right? Because you're $300, you can buy a refurb Steam Deck that's going to play the vast majority of games that are on Steam. And if you want to play more, then you can put Windows on it, and that stuff will work too. And is it going to be great for Cyberpunk? No. But will it run Cyberpunk? Absolutely.
Ivan asks, why the MSI Claw review ended up in discussion about a future of Steam Deck? Good point. We can come back to the Claw. This isn't a review, though.
It's not a review.
Yeah, this is not a review. It is still early impressions, but yeah, once again, as I'm playing it, I mean, I'm forcing myself to play it. This is my first time with Meteor Lake in any appreciable way. This is obviously MSI's first handheld, and I'd like to make sure I have a ton of time with the platform to kind of formulate my opinion on it. But once again, as of right now, I don't have, like these other devices, I can't specifically call to one thing to be like, hey, you know what? This is the reason why you would want the MSI version. Once again, other than, unless you just don't want to have AMD, or you're a huge MSI fan. Either way, I mean, I will say I've seen more people learn about who MSI is than ever. Like, there were people in our stream last week that were just like, wait, who is MSI? You know, and we know MSI, but I think, you know, this has definitely elevated MSI in the discourse out there. Some of it is negative, but, you know, some of it is, I think a lot of people say, hey, bad publicity is still publicity.
Well,
to a certain degree.
And there's nothing keeping them from making an AMD version of this at some point in the future, right? Like, they have the molds, they have the chassis, they have all the stuff designed. It's changing the motherboard out gives you an APU version that is maybe more competitive.
Well, and I think I think that will be, whoever can do that first will have a big win. Whether it's Asus, Lenovo, MSI, if they can come out and be like, hey, do you want X product with, you know, when you go to buy it, you pick, do you want the Intel version or the AMD version? That would be awesome.
That would be great. I'd
right?
love that.
Yeah. And do you want more storage? Do you want less storage? Do you want more RAM? Do you want less RAM? You know, the more options in there, the better. And yeah, I could see all of them getting to that point. In a lot of the cases, most people are just going to buy the AMD version, and hopefully Intel can continue to improve on the platform. There's more to learn. Obviously, Meteor Lake is still Meteor Lake
brand new.
Of right now, but yeah. there is new, Lunar Lake is next, right, Gordon? Is that the...
Yeah, it's, yeah. You know, Intel's, if their fab projections are correct, they are going to be a force to be reckoned with. So
the really exciting thing to me is that they've finally, after 15-20 years of this sticker being one size, they've shrunk it down to a quarter the size. So there's a little tiny Intel Inside sticker that's basically a quarter the size of normal Intel Inside sticker.
It is very tiny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's itsy-bitsy.
I've never seen this before. Maybe you have. But yeah, Gord, you know, on every laptop, you get that little core sticker, right? And it's about postage size, maybe?
That rolled out with like the Pentium, I think, right? Or Pentium 2, maybe, 20 years ago? 25 years ago?
I think it predates it, and as I understand it, you get money. So you put the Intel Inside sticker on your device, you get money, which is why Apple doesn't do it, because they don't care. They don't want to like put a sticker on our laptop. What's wrong with you? But
the sticker's to the back of your car, so everybody knows you have a nice MacBook inside that you can smash the window and grab.
You know what? I'm going to get a ruler because I'm curious.
what do you think? So another couple quick. I know this general, not necessarily related to the claw. It seems like we sort of understand the claw is an interesting first generation product that is fairly limited in its appeal over AMD based systems. But what happens should one, does Microsoft, is it time for Microsoft to get serious about making a gaming OS or some kind of fork for
like a stripped down Windows basically?
Well, I mean, clearly handheld is a potential big future. And then all the other thing is, you know, all these hybrid designs, we've already talked about that with KS, and we talked about that with X3D parts where it's a problem. It just it feels like they need to almost get like serious about making a gaming centric OS if they don't want to let, you know, somebody else kind of move in here. And then where do you think this leaves NVIDIA?
Well, those are good questions.
Really good. Real quick, I did measure it. The normal sticker of a Intel Core sticker on this laptop is 2 millimeters
across
by 2 millimeters.
Okay,
yeah, it's square. The tiny one on the MSI claw is 1 millimeter.
Quarter.
So, it's a quarter of the size. Yeah.
Half the money or quarter the money for that is the question.
I don't know, but I want to know. You know, hopefully, I wonder if MSI went to Intel and was like, "Listen, we can't put a 2 millimeter sticker, you know, 2 millimeter by 2 millimeter sticker on this. It's tiny. Can you please make a small one?" And this is the first time I've ever seen it.
2 centimeters, right?
Millimeter.
On
a laptop, it's not millimeters.
Millimeters would be very small.
That's 2 millimeter.
Yeah. No, that's 2 centimeters, dude.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So like a standard.
I don't know. America units. God,
we don't know.
All right.
Yeah, we don't.
So okay, a 2-part question: what's NVIDIA think about all this? And
should Microsoft care?
For me, there's two Microsofts, right? There's Microsoft that cares about Windows, and then there's Microsoft that cares about selling people services. And I think that the side of Microsoft that's like selling services is really enthusiastic about selling people into Game Pass Ultimate with cloud streaming. and that's probably, if they release a box, a handheld, that it's a thing, because already they've come out and said, hey, we're going to make cloud streaming available for your entire digital library, not just games that are on Game Pass. But presumably you'll have to be paying for Game Pass in order to get access to that streaming, or some, there'll be some ongoing cost to the user. My guess is that if Microsoft does a handheld, it's a, you can play your Game Pass and Xbox 360 and Windows Store library in the cloud, not, hey, you can run Xbox, you can run PC games locally. Because I think they care less about that market than getting $15 a month from people forever and ever and ever.
And to the same thing when we were talking earlier about the KS and the hybrid architecture stuff. Yes, the handheld is a big market. A lot of people are talking about it. It's got a lot of buzz. But in the overall scheme of Windows, is Microsoft actually going to peel away the resources needed to make, to address such a small market?
Well, I mean, how many, they've sold millions of Steam Decks at this point.
But those are Steam Decks.
No, I know, yeah. I know. But I mean, I think if they're concerned about something, it's they're concerned about the encroachment of Linux on PC gaming, which is one of the tentpole uses of the x86 Microsoft architecture. And like, that has to be the concern at Microsoft, not that they won't have a way to dump Candy Crush on your Steam OS machine for you, so you can have that there, and they can get some incremental revenue for everybody who accidentally plays that one day.
I don't know. Well, yeah, their worry would have to be so great to be like, hey, you know what? We're gonna take away the resources to do that. I hope they do. I really do. I want to see that. But I don't know. At this point, I'm not convinced. I don't.
Yeah. No, it's interesting future, right? Because you let somebody build in your backyard, and you just keep letting them build in your backyard. You wake up and there's a massive, empires there. So it does feel like they're going to have to take it more seriously, because, the Steam Deck has been a phenomenal hit and has proven it can work. So if they want to, crush it, they're going to have to actually get serious about making a better gaming OS, for handhelds, for hybrid designs PC.
And I wonder, on the NVIDIA side, the question is the wild card, because we haven't heard a whole lot about what's going on the Tegra side in a while.
We know. I mean, they're in the Nintendo Switch,
and presumably,
obviously, whatever the follow up is
Switch harder.
Be.
Yeah,
ARM is definitely something they're very interested. I mean, they tried to buy ARM, right? So, I mean, but they're also raking in lots of money right now.
But
AI,
yeah, but that means they have more money for more resources. So
I don't think NVIDIA cares.
Yeah,
We don't even put out budget GPUs anymore. Like, to make an itty bitty chip to go into handhelds, I just really think they care. They'd rather sell the big ones that they unveiled yesterday for $200,000.
Well, and NVIDIA's dipped in their toes in this water before, right? Like, they did all those shields where you could set it up, and you could, if you had an NVIDIA GPU and a shield, you could sit on your couch and do the thing that I do with my Steam Deck every day, where I stream the game from the big PC to the little computer. And
it was awesome.
And it was rad. And then they stopped making them because they sold like 18 of them. And it was a huge boondoggle. And now they're selling a bazillion AI GPUs and making, huge super turbo water cooled for you, rack mounts. And like, I don't care. I just want faster video cards. In a world where they weren't focused on all the AI stuff, and that's where all their growth was, and that's why their stock was the highest it's ever been, that's why we're the most valuable companies in the world, and that's why Jensen's bought a 17th super yacht or something, I assume. They would be doing Tegra Steam OS machines, right? I don't think they need to care right now.
I would actually lay the blame for the original Shield, which was really a really pretty awesome handheld gaming device at the time. I would blame Google for that. Google was not a good, and frankly, as an Android user, Google is not a good steward of the OS. And I would say Google mismanaged that as well.
But was it Google or was it NVIDIA? Because they forked an Android. Did they have Google apps on the Shield?
Well, it was Android based.
They did, yeah.
But you can't. It was the experience, because I loved the design, the physical design of it. It was a fold up clamshell device with a controller on it, and it was terrible because like Android, most of the games just did not map over to the controls because Android games didn't support it. They actually had this thing, oh, well, we are going to have this like kludgy thing where you can map the controls and then the community can actually release the profiles. And that kind of went nowhere because none of the games, I mean, it's that there's a reason why the entire world is iOS, right? Yeah. Because the it's a more uniform experience and they manage it better. And Google is just, you know, who knows what they're doing with it. So I really would blame that one on Google, frankly. Well, so not the hardware.
I mean, yeah.
But it was also early for ARM,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, but it was going early. Forward, though, I do wonder if, hey, whatever is coming out, whatever work NVIDIA is doing with Nintendo for the successor to the Switch, could they then be like, hey, we're also then going to use this as a way to get into gaming devices? I don't know that.
Well, and do we know that NVIDIA is doing the successor to the Switch already? Is that?
Yeah, that's a big assumption. Yeah, that's not confirmed. Yeah. That's a big assumption.
So, like, it wouldn't surprise me if Nintendo goes with an APU this time just so that the back ports and the cross ports for games are easier.
Yeah, well, they've at least said that, hey, this generation is going to be one of the smoothest moving generations. The games are going to be backported and that kind of stuff. So I feel pretty confident saying it's going to be NVIDIA based.
Okay. Hey, so. I unfortunately have to hop off.
Oh, okay.
I didn't expect to talk about the KS and the MSI Cloud to take a full 2 hours.
Sorry, Brad. He's a busy man. He's the boss.
I love it. Gordon. Love seeing you, man. I need that TPS report on Friday.
Oh, dang it.
Adios, y'all.
Thanks,
awesome,
Brad.
Hammer. Thanks, Brad.
See you, Brad.
Bye, Brad.
But I think, okay, so if that is the case, I don't know the expected performance. I'm not a leaker. I don't follow that kind of stuff. So I don't know the expected performance of whatever the newest Tegra process is on. So I don't even know if it can compete with Arc or AMD based offerings, but I don't know. I bet there are people in NVIDIA who would love to be in there.
Sure.
Will they do it? I don't know. But I mean, they Tegra is still around. Like they are continuing to develop Tegra, right? It's not dead in the water.
Yeah, you're right. Because it would be a little complicated to build the heart, the guts of the next Switch, and then also sell, you know, something for gaming handheld as well. So they would be directly competing with their customers. So that would be a little strange, a little bit.
I mean, I don't know if Nintendo would see that, though. Because I bet Nintendo doesn't care two craps about.
Well, they don't
Steam
need
Deck,
to because, you know, they're like, they make magic, right? Nintendo makes magic, so.
Yeah.
Arguably, whatever the next Switch is, you know it's going to sell boffo because they have it tuned just right. Everything is correct, and you've got the force of Nintendo behind it.
Well, so you've got the games.
They build games for the hardware rather than the other way around.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And they're amazing at building games. So, yeah. So, I don't know. Good questions. I mean, I hope, once again, I'm glad Intel is here in the claw. I want there to be an AMD they've killed it in the handheld space. But it is always nicer when there's more competition.
Competition is good.
Competition is good.
Always good.
If NVIDIA can get in there too, hell yeah. I would love that. And then, yeah, you would have to really kind of differentiate on the software offerings or the actual design of the handheld offerings, all that kind of stuff. I love seeing that kind of stuff. But it's early days. Also, I think the bigger question is, is this handheld space going to be around for a long time? Is it going to continue? We're in, what is that hype cycle? What is that called?
The Gartner hype cycle.
Yeah, right. Like, we're pretty early.
No, dude, we're through it. They're shipping products. They've sold millions of units. We went through the trough of disillusionment faster than I've ever seen with the
really?
Steam Deck.
Okay, yeah.
The trough of disillusionment was entirely in the period of time when Valve couldn't make Steam Decks fast enough to sell them to everybody who wanted to buy them, and they were like, yeah, it's gonna be a 6-month wait before you can order it now and you'll get it in like June. This is a market that will continue indefinitely at this point.
And for Valve, it's like it's long overdue, because let's be honest, everything else is flamed out. I've got a Valve Index I paid a lot of money for, and I've got like six different of those ridiculous Steam, whatever machine remote things that were blown out for.
Oh man, I love the Link.
Really? Because I bought them when they were selling them for like $10. So, but I tried giving them away. I couldn't give the damn things away.
I
liked the controller.
Honestly, I wish that they would make a version of the current Steam Deck streaming endpoint that you can do H.265 or and 4K HDR with now. Because the only problem with the Steam Link is it only goes up like 1080p 60 or something, I think.
Yeah. What? It, Yeah, imagine a Steam Deck device that you could plug into your TV.
It was just a little box or stick.
Just a little block. Yeah, yeah. Wow. I've never heard of anything like that. That
would be amazing. Some sort of Steam machine, you could call it.
Well, we have a friend of the show, Kyle, from Hard OCP TV in the chat.
Hey, Kyle.
What's up, Kyle? Says, there are still hurt feelings at NVIDIA about the failure of Tegra. It sold less than 10% of internal sales projections. Allegedly. Maybe that's enough for them to be like, hey, you know what, we need to show that Tegra is awesome.
It's so unfortunate because they launched that at such an early time, and you look at what happened 3 years later when AMD started rolling out M1 and M2, or Apple started rolling out M1 and M2, and how like two extra versions of ARM were enough to kind of give it the performance oomph that it didn't need. Anyway, too early.
Yeah, I'll too keep early, and it. You don't. I'm excited,
but you know, you have to. The only company that could have pulled off what it has pulled off is Apple, because you have to have the iron fist of Apple to be able to do that. The problem with NVIDIA is they don't control the operating systems and all the other. You have to control every single bit of it, and I don't think that kind of works in the PC ecosystem, because you have to have partnerships. Whereas Apple, you don't. You do what Apple does, or, you know, as I said, they take you behind the shed. So what are you going
to
do?
Gordon, I never expected you to express admiration for Apple's supremacy in this particular space before.
Well, you have to. You have to respect what they've done. Who the hell would think you could change architectures four? I don't know.
Three
times, is it more than four
times?
Well, you have Moto. You had...
to the IBM PowerPC.
You had PowerPC. You had x86, so we're on the fourth iteration.
Yes, we are fourth, yeah.
So, I mean, honestly, there is no other company could have survived that. Everybody would have just, it would have been instant suicide and you would have vanished. But, you know, because they have basically fanatical followers and they have this iron fist, you know, method of dealing with all of their customers and partners, it has worked out. I mean, the train runs on time in North Korea. The one train. Runs on time.
I mean, look, Gordon. I don't know
line.
About that metaphor.
Yeah,
stand in this line.
Okay. Last
Whoa,
question.
You're not standing in line correctly.
Last question, Gordon, from a friend of the show, Ivan. He posed this at the beginning of the show, and I want to get to it because I've alluded to it on the show before. Gordon, right now, what is your favorite handheld?
Well, you know, we bought a Switch over Christmas, so I would say that's probably my favorite handheld.
Are you playing games on the Switch, Gordon?
No, I was just amazed by how well the Switch is nailed down, like everything, markets and everything. It's just like, wow, I could understand for the first time. I could really understand what the magic of the Switch is, because they, you know, I mean, they're not quite Apple-like, but they really have everything nailed down. So I was quite impressed by that. But I mean, I guess I would probably say maybe Coleco Football.
Oh, the soccer game was way better than Coleco Football. Are you kidding? That soccer
for a second there, I was like, wait, what?
Like football, you could win the football every time. The soccer, though, you could play against other people. It was hard.
I had the basketball, the Mattel basketball one, which was pretty lame.
Oh, you
but
didn't like
I
that
thought
one?
The Coleco Football one was much better than the stupid ass Mattel one, because all you did was run past everybody. I mean, it's great if you want to be a running back, I guess. But in Coleco, there was passing. Remember, there was that you could actually pass the ball down the field. It was like wow. So probably Coleco Football. I really should look on eBay for one.
The baseball. Did you play the baseball one that was shaped like an actual diamond? That was pretty good.
I don't know. I think a lot of those early handheld Mattel ones were pretty lame. So the Coleco one was definitely. It even had like a toggle switch you could do. I don't remember what it did.
Look, they did a lot with no ICs, so you know.
Yeah. Well, Gordon, I do have a Steam Deck OLED ready to drop off to you, so you can try that one.
Yeah, no, I definitely want to try it.
It's the year of Linux desktop, Gordon. This is finally it. It's happening.
It would be nice. It would be nice to actually see it all come together. So
yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Let's get to Q&A before we get out of here. We have definitely been going long. So yeah. If you have a question, get them in the chat right now. I'm probably only going to pull a couple of them, but there are some good ones that I do want to get to. We do have a couple super chats. Actually, well, both of them are from the same friend of the show, Coffee. Gave us a $10 Canadian super chat. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Always appreciate it. Said, Jensen was having a blast at the GTC keynote. He was cracking jokes and seemed to be in really good mood. I wonder why. I mean, who wouldn't be happy if they just became the 19th richest person in the world? Gordon, did you watch the GTC keynote?
I watched most of it, but then I had to get on a Zoom call with somebody. I would think, you know, again, I don't think it's about the money. I think it's about the winning. It validates his lifelong, you know, pursuit of winning. And he's winning right now, clearly. I mean, you think about it, Jensen's a guy who was picking fights with Intel like in the 1990s, right? 2000s, he was picking fights with Intel, and which is crazy if you think about the force Intel was in the 2000s, and he was picking verbal fights with them. And he has not let off of that, despite you would think it not working out, but it really, I would think that's the happiness, is like all those visions are paying off, and he's introducing a new part. I've been in rooms when he's introduced new parts, and he's always loved to do it. And he's also introducing something that is going to make tremendous value for everybody. So when everything, it's great to be a winner. It is really great to be a winner, because you're pretty happy at that point.
And all eyes are on him.
And
for sure.
I'll say,
I don't think it's about money is what I'm saying.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. He loves to win, and he's been he told us 20 years ago that the GPU is going to be the most important thing in your computer. It like GeForce 3 launch, I think maybe was when he dropped that one the first time. And here's the other thing. He's good at the CEO keynote, like in a way that a lot of other, excellent. like you look at like Musk or a lot of these other people, and they're just bad at it. And and Jensen is charismatic and like knows how to control the stage, and has clearly spent time getting good at it, because he didn't used to be good at it, or didn't used to be as good at it, at least.
Yeah, I mean, he enjoys it too. He really, like, I saw him at Taipei, and he was, you know, in front of a crowd of 5,000 people, it feels like, and then he waded out into the crowd like it was a mosh pit, and you're like surrounded by hundreds of people.
His security people are flipping out. Yeah,
I know. Like, I can't believe you're like worth billions of dollars, and you're here just crowd surfing in this crowd.
It wasn't actually crowd surfing.
No.
Well, and then he also then. And then he did a press conference with, you know, 150 international press, and it's his element. He's, you know, I know PC gamers, he's not your favorite person, but you have to respect the ability for him to execute and to be able to get out there and not make major, major flubs, or also bore the hell out of you. Because I've been to plenty of keynotes where they're just terrible, right?
Yeah. Too true.
And you always see like the three name shirt thing. I think we could actually successfully have a shirt that says basically Jensen, Lisa, and Pat at this point. Because those are three CEOs that can get on the stage, they can present, they can talk, and they keep you well entertained, and they also have a deep understanding of the subject matter where they can answer it. Whereas, you know, there are a lot of keynotes by CEOs that are just really, you know, I guess the kids would say cringy, because it's like, oh my God, this is just like so boring and so bad. But it's, you know, really rare for that to happen with those three people. So,
yeah. Well, the actual question, the second follow up with a $2 Canadian super chat from friend of the show, Coffee, asked, also, do you know if Blackwell is a monolithic die? Good question. Brad might know.
They showed it off, right? But there is some kind of interesting split, right? There's some partition between them.
Yeah, it's like a dual die, but I don't know if that. I don't know. I didn't watch the keynote. I saw some people talking about it. Obviously, we didn't talk about it here on the show because we lean towards consumer stuff, so we don't fully know how that's going to flesh out on the consumer side. I haven't really caught up with it, but I am curious to know.
Did you see the robot stuff? When I went back in, and he was on the stage with the robots.
I didn't see the robot stuff.
It was pretty cool, because it looked like an Iron Man thing where they were like, you know, 12 or 15 human-sized robots. And I thought they were the actual robots. I don't know if they were or they were projections. And then he had two smaller robots on stage that walked up to him. And I was trying to make an image of that. I had a picture of Jensen with the robots, and it was like, you know, and this droid's got a bad motivator, you know. But I couldn't because Photoshop failed me.
He's not Star Wars at this point. He's going to Iron Man, if anything. You know, that's you know.
Kyle Hart, OCP, friend of the show, confirms that the B200 is chiplets, so multiple dies. B100 is monolithic. Desktop will be monolithic. Ah, so.
Thank you, Kyle.
It was a huge die. That's all I took away from it.
Very
from
large.
Yeah. Could you imagine what
it's
going to cost?
Yeah, that means a 5090 is going to be the size of a 1490.
I'm going to say 5090 will be 2000. $1,899. Look, $1,899 easily.
My guess is you install your motherboard and CPU inside the 5090.
There we go.
Might as well at this point.
Right?
Yeah. All right. And we got a $5 super chat from David. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. It says, I don't have a question. Well, I'm just happy to see Gordon back. He and EVGA have been part of my time building PCs for 20 plus years.
Aww.
So yeah, same.
Thank you. It's good to be back.
Yeah. Glad to have you back. We do have a couple questions over on the Discord. If you want to join in on our Discord, there's a link in the description. We got some fine folks over there. I'm not going to get to all these. We will hold on to these till later. Here's a Okay, I'm going to get this one from a friend of the show, mostly running at stock-ish. What do you think of the continuing development of PresentMon 2.0? A friend of the show, Steve, over at Gamers Nexus, did another video with friend of the show, Tom Peterson, over at Intel, about new updates to PresentMon, adding in more ways to kind of see what's going on within the gaming pipeline so people can understand fully what's happening. A lot of it is honestly still over my head personally. But Gordon, did you get a chance to watch that video with Steve or no?
Yeah, I saw it by the way, go over to Gamers Nexus, subscribe and click like. He has a video with Tom Peterson or TAP of Intel Arc team where he shows off the brand new PresentMon. And it's actually pretty cool because it really is building on the, you know, helping people understand where exactly the bottlenecks are in a gaming PC, building on that GPU weight stuff. Like in there, it's interesting. In the video, Tom talks about where previously people thought like, oh, this is actually a GPU bottleneck, but actually it turns out it's a CPU bottleneck. Also pointing out that with fraps, which people use for a lot of analysis in the past, it actually was incorrect because of the way fraps was implemented in sort of understanding where the bottleneck is. A lot of people using fraps thought it probably was actually, if I'm getting this right, they thought the bottleneck was a GPU bottleneck, but it ended up turning out to be a CPU bottleneck because of the way fraps was designed, as TAP called it, a shim. It's just kind of jammed in there, and it would actually cross over like more of where the frame generations were to where you would think it was GPU bound, but it was really CPU bound. So this PresentMon should help a lot of things. I actually downloaded it. I was kind of messing with it, but I don't ever have any real machines up and running. So it is good. And if you don't know PresentMon, for people who don't know, PresentMon has basically been out. Intel has developed that tool for a long, long, long time. It's the basis of many tools used by CapFrameX, and some of their tools are out there are based on it. So there's just a lot of people who use the stuff that Intel has done. And it is kind of nice to see that they're developing this now to help people understand where the bottlenecks are.
Yeah, no, it's good stuff. I'm glad it's there too. I want to dig more into it, but what do you think?
Yeah, it definitely seems like it needs to be a little more friendly for average people, because that's why people love using Afterburner, because you think you know what it is, but it would be nice to have the presentmon be a little more understandable, I think, for an average person.
Well, the average gamer. The benefit of having cross-platform tools or cross-vendor tools, I guess, to do this kind of work with, is that you can, like, if you're the engineer at a game studio whose job it is to figure out why you have frame sags in three parts of this one level, then you don't have to learn a new tool for each new job you have in each new game you work on. You can just use the same thing over and over again, which actually cuts down those that like, it turns out learning how to use the new tool is one of the big gates on doing a lot of this work sometimes. So the profiling stuff is always, it's the reason that early access games often get really fast. They're people complain about performance during the entire early access period. And then like a month before launch, you'll be like, oh wow, this early access game suddenly got fast. What the heck happened? And it's because you don't look at that performance until the very end. It's not a thing you look at until the very end, because often you'll make changes that'll jack up whatever you do to fix it. And you don't want to, you don't do that work twice, right?
Are people still primarily doing, are game developers still primarily doing all development on x86, Windows, and then using that for their ports to console? I mean, it still goes to the console first and then sort of comes back. But I've always long understood or been told that the tools for PC development are just so much better that that's where people are still doing a lot of development, even though for some reason, when it comes back to the PC, it's sometimes a pile of poo. So that doesn't make any sense.
So every studio is different. Like obviously, like first and second party Sony stuff is probably going to do PlayStation first, which is, I think, Sony and Nintendo are probably the more challenging development environments. Microsoft has its own unique set of problems just in the way they implement UWP and Microsoft Store versions of games sometimes is weird and has some weird emulation stuff going on, although I think there are ways around that now as well. But for the most part, everybody, even if you're building a PlayStation game or a Nintendo game, you're writing the code on a Windows machine. Now, the thing that started happening is I've started seeing, like, because I've been talking to a bunch of indie developers about going to work for them, frankly, and I'm seeing more people that are like building their 2D indie games on that are Godot or Unity or even Unreal in some cases, and they're building them on ARM MacBooks, which I was surprised by.
Huh.
So non-3D stuff, people are doing more mobile, ARM. When you start at a place, they're like, do you want a PC? Do you want a Mac? And if you ask for a Mac, they give you an M1 or M2 MacBook Pro.
Huh. Yeah, no, that is a fear, right? Apple's always looking to eat somebody's lunch. So one day they will make a serious run at PC gaming, and we have to be prepared for that.
Apple handheld?
No, they're never gonna. We already have the Apple handheld. It's in my pocket right now.
I don't know.
Apple is, if there's one thing that you can trust that Apple's going to screw up, it's gaming over and over again, because they make billions of dollars on gaming. And it's the kind that none of us care about.
True.
Right.
All right. Last question. We got to get out of here. Friend of the show, VC Jester, asked a funny question spurred on by something you said earlier, Gordon. You've been in Carbonite for a year. What's the first thing you do when you unfrozen?
Oh,
not
boy.
Saying literally, just, you know.
I did have a burger. I mean, that was like yeah. I
could not eat. So you're frozen like this, for a year, and they de-thaw you, and you're like, oh, man, I need a burger.
I did actually have it was cool because I couldn't even stand the smell of hamburgers for a while. So to be able to actually eat a hamburger with onions on it was like, I had an In-N-Out burger the other day. I was like, oh my God, I can eat In-N-Out again.
Oh yeah.
So
it was cheap too.
Yeah. I would say of course my wife is like, you just had a burger yesterday. It's like, I want another one today.
You're 7 months off. You're behind. You got to catch up.
I have one in the fridge. I had my son pick it up. It's like, hey, bring that burger over from this.
That's so funny.
I put it in the fridge because I'm gonna heat it up. And it's not great reheated, but it's like, I don't care.
Better than not having a burger, I guess. Yeah. Okay. I dig it. Will, you're frozen in Carbonite. They unthaw you.
Oh, man.
Like, first thing you want to do.
I don't even know, man. Frozen Carbonite sounds ideal to me. That's like, I just take a nap, get a good sleep in. Like, I, maybe get some audiobooks piped in there while I'm in there. Just so, maybe it hits, maybe it doesn't. I don't know. I'd probably go get a slice of pizza, though, would be my number one.
food related.
Big old right? thick piece of pizza. Yeah. Like Gordon planted the food seed in my head, I think. So
Willis?
Will just talked. Will and I think alike. Pizza. You know, pizza is definitely the one I'll go to, you know.
It was either pizza or noodles for me, right? Yeah. Like a big bowl of noodles I'd go for too.
All right, well.
How about you, Adam?
I guess I'm the weird one because all I could think of was Austin Powers. He gets unfrozen and then he just pees for a long time.
Yes.
Like, that was
I
my
really
first,
need to go pee.
Yeah, that was my first thought. I was like, man, I bet you're frozen for a year. You get out, you probably really need to pee.
Look, I'm old enough. Gordon knows this pain. Once you reach a certain age, it's like two, 3 hours. You're like, man, I could pee. No problem. It's never an issue.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah, but why would you need to? You were frozen. You're not like taking a big gulp in there.
That's still a risk.
The pee's frozen too.
I still crack up every time I see
that.
Oh
my goodness.
That's pretty good.
So here's the question. Is the start of the 40-year-old virgin or the start of that Austin Powers bit the funniest pee sketch in a movie in that decade?
What was the
he just wakes up and he pees all over himself.
Oh.
And when I start talking about it, I realize this is increasingly inappropriate. Yeah. We should move on. I was like, why is this funny? Okay, carry on. Hi, hello. Yeah.
Anyway, Kyle says, thanks, guys. Great show. He understands that it's over. We're done. No more left to do, except for the outro for your fix of PC Talk and the Full Nerd. Tune in next week. Because next week we've got another podcast. We might actually have something interesting in the pipe as well. Hopefully, maybe work that out.
I like to think there's something interesting every week, Adam.
I can't guarantee it. I'm sorry. To listen to us on the go, subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Pocket Casts, YouTube Music. Now don't go over to Google Podcasts. Don't go over to Stitcher. That's dead.
Never forget.
And if you are on one of those services, please leave a review. Every time you leave a review, Gordon gets another cheeseburger because he needs them. He needs those burgers. Thank you, Gordon. Thank you, Gordon, for joining us. Glad to have you back.
Yeah.
It seems like people are excited to have you back. So thank you. Yeah.
And I've missed you all. So, and thank you for everyone for the support and love. And it is awesome to be back in the community of nerds, nice nerds that we've built here.
Hell yeah. Good nerds.
Yeah. Give us a thumbs up. Give us a little heart on that little thing in the chat, the little heart thing.
You just did the Korean heart.
I know. Yeah, you know, heart. You got to. Thank you, Will.
Always glad to be here, Adam.
Glad to have you here in person. We're actually going to be down at GDC
tomorrow.
The
Game Developer Conference.
Yeah, poking around. We have some appointments, but mostly just kind of seeing what's going on with the PC and PC gaming. So
I'll tell you, I was down there yesterday. It looked like the extras from the background of Hackers walking around everywhere you go. It's amazing.
Oh, nerds.
Game developer costumes strong this year.
Nerds. Willis.
Cosplay.
Nerd cosplay, yeah. Cosplay. And thank you, Willis, for controlling the verticals and horizontals. Get us the hell out of here.
All righty. Thank you, Adam. I'm going to say, I miss this. I miss having Gordon, you know, back on the show, and I, you know, echo with everyone's on the chat that, you know, we miss you, Gordon, and definitely great to have you back.
The hearts haven't stopped.
Definitely hearts haven't stopped. So yeah,
keep those hearts
going. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. We'll see you next time. Bye.